We got an interesting development in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse. It may not seem like that big of a deal, but I think it strikes the heart of the conservative argument against Kyle. No, hear me out. Kyle Rittenhouse has a gun charge. People were arguing that he was too young to have a weapon. And now the legal team has filed a motion to have those charges dismissed. And it may be the case that the charge is bunk anyway. If that one is out, then there's literally no argument against Kyle Rittenhouse in any way. Clearly it was self-defense. Many people on the left have even said, well, I shouldn't say many people, but some people on the left have actually admitted that it was self-defense, or at least begrudgingly said it was some kind of conflict. Although the left is adamant about locking this guy up, in my opinion, if this gun charge goes out, I'm not a lawyer, we'll talk to one, but it seems like the only way he'd actually get convicted at this point is if it's political, which very well may be the case. But I've heard arguments from conservatives the gun charge was the one that made sense. Now it may actually be, it may be out. We'll see how politics plays a role in this. But joining us today is former lawyer for Kyle Rittenhouse, John Pierce, and you're also the founder of the NCLU.
That's right, the National Constitutional Law Union, the NCLU, and that's nclu.com. And the best way to think of it is essentially the ACLU for the rest of us, or what the ACLU used to say that it does.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
Yeah, it is. It's tragic, and there's a vacuum, and that's why I stepped into it, because, you know, the only way that we protect our Constitution in the long run, and get out of this, sort of tyrannical, downward spiral that we're in is to fight very hard for people whose constitutional rights are violated. And make no mistake, even though, you know, I'm a conservative, this is not a conservative organization. It is not a Republican organization. It's what the ACLU used to say that they did.
Right.
Which was to protect everyone's constitutional rights. And that's what we plan to do.
Right on. And we also have a lot to talk about in terms of January 6th as well.
Yes, sir. So I believe that I represent, by far most of the more January 6th defendants than any other lawyer in the country. I believe the count right now is at 13, and growing. There's a lot of folks that, need help, and, lots to talk about on that case.
We got to go through all that stuff. That's important stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We got Ian Gillen.
Jeez, yeah. Hey, Ian Crossland, man. What's up?
How you doing, Ian?
Thanks for coming, man.
Absolutely. And I do have to say congratulations to everyone on the Cassandra Fairbanks acquisition. Cassandra, I consider Cassandra essentially the best journalist, in the country right now. Amazing person. And she just does such great work. So it's amazing to see you all team up.
Yeah. She's like literally, well, not literally a rock star, but very close.
In my mind, she's there.
Yeah.
I'll say this of Cassandra on Twitter. She certainly is feisty, but her reporting is top notch. Straightforward. It is, I would say, it's usually very straightforward, well researched, and well sourced.
Everything I see Cassandra write, you know, to me looks spot on. She is feisty on Twitter. You kind of have to be feisty on Twitter when you get hit. You kind of have to hit back 10 times harder, or else you're going to get eaten up. So I kind of like it.
Right on.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the corner as well, as you have come to expect me to be. I'm very delighted because we have an air conditioner now, and that means none of us are going to be shiny and sweating anymore.
Yeah, the fans are gone.
Quiet. Oh, man.
We got a special AC unit installed because we foolishly put the studio in the highest point of the house.
The AC is working, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, it's amazing. And it's one of these ultra-quiet units, but we're moving into a new studio probably in the next month or so. It's going to be way better.
Yeah.
The table is going to be attached to the ceiling.
Still looks like you have a little bit of work to do, but it does look like it has a
They just started today.
Okay.
So, but yeah, the table is going to be attached to the ceiling. How about that?
I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
And if it falls, it makes for a great episode.
Right.
It won't be able to fall. It'll be part of the ceiling.
I guess ceilings typically don't fall. So
that's right. Yeah.
There's a secret room in there. Is that right?
No. What are you talking about?
Oh, were you messing with me? Yeah.
What are you talking about, Ian? There's no secret room.
Yeah. That wouldn't be a secret if that was the case.
I know nothing about any.
I think
such
we just rip the wall out and have it be double the size.
Ian's talking about a small crawl space where the cat used to break into.
Oh yeah. That's
I think
how they
Tim
got
lied
up here
to me earlier today.
No.
What?
Oh, I thought you were messing with me earlier.
There's like a crawl space where the AC unit is the cat used to break into.
Yeah.
Yeah, she used to come up.
All right.
Anyway.
Tim,
no
let's cats. Go deep.
Don't forget, though, we are growing. Go to timcast.com, become a member, and you can help support the very important journalism that we do here, like this one where it says Young Turks mocked as the shills for the establishment they are. If you're not a fan of the Young Turks, you'll probably appreciate that segment. But we're usually not that bombastic. But as John noted, we have Cassandra Fairbanks, who's writing articles. We just hired a ton of people. We have a bunch more writers. We're going to have a paranormal mysteries kind of unexplained show coming up with a new editor coming on to produce that show. And as a member, you'll get access to that as well. But don't forget, you can also like this video right now. subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. Let's jump into this first story. It's from Newsweek. Kyle Rittenhouse's lawyer asked judge to dismiss charge he was too young to have a gun. Rittenhouse's attorney filed a motion asking the judge to dismiss the charge that he was too young to possess a gun under Wisconsin's law, arguing that Rittenhouse's assault-style rifle doesn't fall under the definition of the prohibited short-barreled shotguns and rifles. Mark Richards also filed several other arguments, including a dismissal of a video from July 2020 that prosecutors filed motions last week asking a judge to allow as evidence. Prosecutors said the video shows Rittenhouse hitting a teenage girl in the back of Kenosha's waterfront, but Richards argued the altercation is irrelevant to the case. Richards has similarly argued that against prosecutors claiming Rittenhouse has an affiliation with the Proud Boys, which is a, well, I love how they just say this, is a far-right extremist group. Yeah, whatever. Okay, well, we're hanging out with John Pierce. Now, you are not a lawyer for Rittenhouse anymore.
That is correct.
But you were telling me about this gun charge. It's one of the reasons we want to talk about it. You said it was total BS.
Nonsense.
But now, just to give some people context who might not be familiar, they're charging him with what? With murder, right?
There are multiple homicide charges. I mean, it's been a while since I've looked at the actual charges, but yes.
For those that, for whatever reason, don't know what happened, there was ongoing rioting in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Kyle Rittenhouse was there. He had a rifle. He was chased by some men. We've actually had Richie McGinnis witness. Actually, we've had Richie and a bunch of other people who are on the ground and witnesses to what happened. Richie laid out everything experienced. Richie's actually the journalist who took off his shirt, right? Mm. Trying to render aid to one of the guys who got shot. He watched it all. And the gist of the story was that several of the rioters had set a dumpster on fire, were pushing it towards a gas station. Kyle or someone from his group put the fire out, enraging many of the rioters. Kyle was chased. As he was running away, he heard a gunshot because a man standing in the street fired a gun. Actually, initially, people thought the gun was fired up into the air, but there are some reports now that it was actually fired towards them. Either way, Kyle hears the shot, turns around. When this guy lunges for his gun, Kyle fires in self-defense. The guy goes down. Kyle then runs to go get help. He's chased by someone saying, what happened? He says, I'm going to get the police. Someone yells something about get him. That's the guy. He's then chased, knocked to the ground, and some guy runs up with a skateboard, tries to grab the gun, and Kyle fires upward and it goes into his heart. That guy goes down. He's dead.
Well, he hit him in the skull with the skateboard, which right then could have killed Kyle, first of all.
So the guy with the board actually, yeah.
Right here with the sharp edge of his skateboard. He was under full scale assault the entire time.
And the next guy who came up had a gun.
Absolutely.
He had a gun and tried grabbing the gun from Kyle and took 223 to the bicep. I believe it was his right bicep.
That was his right bicep.
And it vaporized.
He had a Glock that he was about literally a half a second from bringing down to execute Kyle while Kyle was sitting on the street. Kyle simply fired that shot a half a second before he got executed by that person.
The guy was holding the gun. And you know, the guy actually said, I want to be careful here because of the litigation around this, but my understanding, I could be wrong, he actually said that he should have shot him. Like later in an activist rally, he said something to that effect.
I think it was at his hospital room when he was talking to one of his friends. He said something to the effect that his only regret was that he didn't shoot him and empty his entire magazine into Kyle.
That right there. Kyle was, he was a local resident. People say he crossed state lines. Yeah, he lived, 20 miles away? It's a suburb.
He literally lived right across.
He worked there.
Yes, he worked in the Kenosha area. Yeah,
he worked in Kenosha.
And he was there the night before. He had not crossed state lines with any weapon. That's nonsense.
Right. So what ends up happening now is you have the left saying he killed these activists. He was hunting them down. He's a white supremacist. It's absurd.
It's absurd.
And anybody who goes to the evidence knows it's not true. But there were many conservatives saying, but he wasn't supposed to have a gun. He's underage. Now we're hearing that they want to get the current lawyers want to get that dismissed, and you're saying it was BS anyway, so let's break that down. What do you mean by that?
That charge is absolute nonsense. Mark Richards is a terrific lawyer. I'm proud to say that I'm the one that got him, kind of retained on that case. He's doing a great job. He will do a great job. Wisconsin is an open carry state. The type of AR-15 that Kyle had that night, which is a long barrel AR-15, is completely legal in that state. It's legal for Kyle to have had possession of it at that age. If that rifle had been shorter, potentially there may have been an argument under that statute that there's an issue. Also, if I recall correctly, You know, there's a very strong argument. I think Mark made it in this motion that, you know, that statute relates to various sort of hunting, you know, regulations that have nothing to do with that case. That charge should be dismissed. It never should have been brought. None of these charges should have been brought. But that charge should go away. Mark Richards is absolutely correct that charge should be dismissed.
It was interesting seeing, even a lot of conservatives on Twitter mentioning that maybe, you know, some people said he shouldn't have had the gun and they're going to get him because if in the process of committing one crime, someone dies, you get charged for that. And then people said you're allowed, even if you're not allowed to have the gun, picking up a gun in self-defense or having one in self-defense is exempt. There's a lot of arguments about it, but I guess none of it matters because the law itself doesn't even apply to what Kyle was doing.
That law does not apply to that weapon. It does not apply in the context of what happened. The charge should not have been brought. This is a totally, totally political persecution. It's not even close. This case needs to be dropped. If somehow, some way, you know, these political, you know, Soros-funded prosecutors in Kenosha, Wisconsin, get some kind of conviction against Kyle Rittenhouse, it will be a travesty, and it will go a long way towards eviscerating the right of self-defense that all of us have.
I agree. Now, I've said in the past, though, I mean, so this looks like any rational argument that a reasonable person might presume is out the window. We had a leftist on who said he actually, this guy Destiny, he got kicked out of the Twitch partner program for saying that it was the clearest case of self-defense he had ever seen. And this is a leftist who said this. No. I mean, this is a guy we had in here and he was defending critical race theory and social justice and all this stuff. We clearly disagreed, but he was like, oh, come on. If you're being honest, you saw the video, you know it was self-defense.
It's in fact virtually a perfect case of self-defense because on every element of self-defense, it's not just that he meets the standard. I mean, he exceeds it by orders of magnitude.
Like he was running away.
like people were trying to kill him at every moment. Like they were trying to take his rifle and, you know, shoot him with it. Like the individual you mentioned literally had a Glock in his hand that he was bringing down.
Who later expressed it was his desire to just unload into the guy.
Precisely.
And someone fired first. It's mind-blowing. Oh,
absolutely.
To me.
From behind him, in his direction, they attempted to ambush him. And when Kyle turned around, Joseph Rosenbaum was coming at him at full speed and was literally right on top of him, lunging for the barrel of the weapon, as Richie has noted.
This is crazy that it's kind of how did it end up that he's being charged with these things?
I mean, look, this is why the George Soros's of the world are very, very dangerous. I mean, prosecutors, local and federal, have extraordinary discretion. You know, George Soros, for all of his flaws, is no idiot. And he has gone a long way in places like Philadelphia and in Los Angeles with this Gascon guy out there.
Is it Chesa Boudin as well?
I believe that's right. I mean,
Fox.
Yeah, it's a very, very dangerous, I mean, physically dangerous thing for the citizens of these cities because they are essentially choosing outright and announcing that they're not going to be prosecuting all manner of crimes. I mean, for example, in San Francisco and, you know, California, essentially they've said they will not prosecute shoplifting crimes if it's a value of under like $900. I mean, so
did you see the Neiman Marcus video?
I did not.
It's just like 10 people running out of the building full speed, carrying stacks of stuff.
Well, that's $9,000 worth of stuff without prosecution.
I mean, maybe you can call it a conspiracy, but no one's enforcing it. There's another video that just started going viral where it's people walking and filling up bags casually with no masks on, just filling them up and then just walking out the door.
It's not rocket science to anticipate the impact that these sorts of policies and these sorts of prosecutors will have on the complete breakdown of law and order in these cities. And it's happening. And, you know, regular Americans see that it's happening. And the left may underestimate regular Americans. But I believe they're going to get punished severely at the ballot box as a result of this.
Now, after Chauvin, I said Kyle's going to get life. That's what I said. After I watched what happened with Chauvin, because you had a few very important points there, that the defense tried getting the venue changed because of the riots, and the judge said everybody in Minnesota knows who this guy is. There's no venue where he can go, and that to me is astounding because it was an admission that there would be no fair trial. In which case is dismissed, free to go because we don't lock people up unless they get a fair trial, unless we go through due process. When that happened, then you saw the jurors being led into the courthouse with armed men to protect them from the extremists that have been attacking Brooklyn Heights. I think it was Brooklyn Center.
Brooklyn Center.
Yeah. clearly these people were being influenced, and they even admitted it after the fact, saying that they were scared.
Well, you had Maxine Waters show up right in the middle of it, you know, demanding that everything continued to burn if there wasn't the quote-unquote right, you know, verdict. You had, you know, Joe Biden, who's advocating for the, you know, quote-unquote correct or right verdict, and his excuse was that, well, jury deliberations had started, so therefore they're sequestered, so, you know, that won't impact things. I mean, this is, these are things that are fundamental. I mean, the criminal and civil jury system in the United States is so fundamental to our freedoms. It goes back, you know, to the Magna Carta, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
The jury is the along with, you know, sheriffs at different times and different circumstances, the jury is the last bastion of protection for people who are, you know, wrongfully charged. I will say I'm a jury trial lawyer. That's what I do. I have immense faith in juries. That Chauvin trial was very concerning. But Kyle is totally innocent, and I have complete faith that jury is going to find it the right
way. But you think, like, there's going to be riots. The jury is going to be sitting there staring, saying, who wants to be the martyr? They're going to say, not me.
I have complete faith that that jury is going to come back with the right verdict. The case is so clear. I don't see a Wisconsin, an American jury coming back with any other result.
You know, the big difference between that and Chauvin is with Chauvin, there was big arguments about the amount of force, whether or not Chauvin should have kept his knee on his back or neck or whichever you perceived it as, that he should have rendered aid immediately when Floyd stopped moving. So there's arguments.
Well, and look, of course, with Chauvin, you have the 800-pound gorilla of the 9-minute video, right, that is shown over and over and over again, right? That's an extremely, it's a tough video. It's a tough video to watch, and it's a tough piece of evidence to overcome. Kind of the converse, I think you have with Kyle, which is it's probably the first, criminal trial in history where it's literally as if you were watching the Super Bowl and there were 100 different angles of high definition right. video of everything that was happening that you can sync up. There is simply no way around the conclusion that it was 100% perfect self defense.
Yeah, but you could still get a jury that just says, "I'm not falling on that sword."
I have complete faith in Mark Richards and that jury.
All right, all right. Yeah. I think it'll be particularly interesting. But let's jump to this next subject, sure. January 6th, because, you know, we're talking about George Floyd. Somebody tweeted something about conservatives and the double standard. There was some conservative who said something about, you know, why don't we know who killed Ashley Babbitt? We should have this information released immediately with George Floyd. We got this big show trial in the press. And then someone said, like, how are conservatives not understanding, you know, the differences between George Floyd and Ashley Babbitt? They were like, it's a double standard that they don't care about Floyd, but they only care about her because they're racist. And I said, Ashley Babbitt wasn't chewing on a speedball behind the wheel of a car and then actively resisting police. I'm like, I'm not saying that, you know, George Floyd deserved or any of that should have happened, but Ashley Babbitt stood up and looked through a window and took a bullet to the neck, right?
So look, I mean, there are some, so first of all, I pray for Ashley Babbitt's family, and I pray for them, to obtain the justice, that they deserve. There's all kinds of strange things going on with everything related to January 6th. So specifically with respect to what you just mentioned, was she shot in the stomach? Was she shot in the shoulder? Was she shot in the neck? There are basically three different stories, that have come out, from the medical examiner, from the media, et cetera. The chief of the Capitol Police, who either resigned or was ousted a couple days, after the event, a few weeks after his firing or his resignation, wrote a 8-page letter. I think his name is Stephen Sondland. Wrote an 8-page letter to Nancy Pelosi, essentially, you know, writing about what happened that day and sort of an after-action review. There is no mention whatsoever of the Ashley Babbitt shooting in that letter.
Wow.
Whatsoever. I mean, why is that? How is that possible? Now, as to the. But I will say, look, the truth is going to come out about everything that happened on January 6th. It is going to take some time, but the true January 6th commission is going to be what happens in those Article 3 federal courtrooms whenever we try these cases. I represent 13 of these people, and I will tell you that we are taking every single one of these cases to trial. We are going to expose exactly what happened that day, how it happened, who's behind it, what happened, et cetera. With respect to the double standard, you know, obviously I need to be a little bit circumspect about the way I talk about the particular cases that I'm a lawyer in. And, you know, juries will decide, you know, with the outcome of those cases. But what a lot of Americans are saying, and I think it's undeniable and it's self-evident, is that, you know, where are the pre-dawn raids to round up the hundreds and hundreds of people, the Antifa folks who burned down Kenosha and Portland and Minneapolis and Los Angeles, and in effect held a federal courthouse under siege in Portland for over 100 days, including attempting, not very effectively, but attempting to burn it down.
Well, they broke in several times.
Oh,
they used some kind of welding tool to cut through the locks.
Yeah, and they tried to burn it down when human beings were inside.
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, we have pre-dawn raids with AR-15s where there are three-year-olds in the house, you know, with folks like, you know, 73-year-old pastors who are Vietnam veterans with no criminal record. Where is the priority to protect, like, regular American cities? And I think that it's just self-evident, and a lot of Americans see that there seems to be a dual standard of justice right now. And that is think about how dangerous a thing that is. A fundamental precept of the American system, the American idea, the American Constitution is that there is equal justice under the law. When the faith in that idea, starts to crumble, and in fact, I would say starts to be shattered as it is right now, that's a very, very dangerous thing for a free society and a constitutional republic to hold together for very long.
I watch rich people just walk on law. I mean, when Hillary Clinton's email scandal dropped, she was a Secretary of State and was involved in getting Sidney Blumenthal in Libya. Like, some of the most criminal actions of getting us into a war in Libya, directly against Obama's direct order that she can't work with Sidney Blumenthal. She worked with them anyway. Like,
well, she destroyed public records and got away with it.
Classified. Including classified.
So equal protection under the law.
I'm sorry, it was something about yoga or whatever.
Yeah, they were talking about yoga and birthday parties. And of course, as you probably noticed, the journalist who essentially broke the story of Loretta Lynch meeting with Bill on the tarmac has, you know, been suicided.
The journalist who broke the story. I don't think people look too much into this. There was an anchor. He reported the story. He wrote on that story for years.
Yeah.
He wrote a book about it. I don't look too much into that. It doesn't make sense for me. That would be a conspiracy in any way. I think sometimes people, you know what I think? We talked about this on the show. Here's a guy who breaks this story. Turns out to be one of the biggest stories. He then rides on that for a year or so, telling everybody, oh, I'm the guy who reported it. But he's just a guy who talked on TV about it.
Yeah.
He writes a book about it. He then does a book tour about it. 2 years go by. Dude's got nothing left. I don't think there's like, we're going to wait 6 years and then retaliate against him. No, yeah. I think it's a guy who almost touched the sky. And then, you know, with all due respect to his family and a sad story, but I just don't see it.
But look, obviously I have no firsthand knowledge about it. I just do know there is a lengthy, you know, count of deaths and suicides in the Clinton past.
I think that's all exaggerated.
Yep.
I've looked through so much of this idea of the Clinton stuff, and there's like a bunch of memes. And I'm like, there was one where it was like an accountant at a firm that once worked with the Clintons. I'm like, come on, dude. Yeah. The firm's got 3,000 employees or whatever. People really stretch it. You know, what you got to be careful of is the confirmation bias in that this guy reported a story like six years ago. And then like, what are we supposed to assume that the Clintons, like, in 6 years time, we'll get our revenge and expose ourselves to massive risk for no reason? A bunch of these stories that come out about the Clintons are like strange, circuitous connections that I think are just silly.
But the email thing is not. That's
the
a
email
blatant
thing's legit
crime. It was a crime that she committed that she wasn't charged for. And Loretta Lynch was basically investigating that, right? She was in charge. She was the attorney general or something at the time. And then Bill Clinton went and met with her and had a conversation off the record that people could see happening. And then the charges got dropped. Is that what it was, or the investigation. Didn't go forward?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, James Comey held a very sort of famous or infamous, you know, press conference in which he went through sort of, you know, 15 minutes of talking about, you know, how sort of reckless and negligent and bad this was about the emails, and then sort of surprisingly at the end sort of dropped the bomb that, it didn't rise to the level of her being prosecuted or whatever. But, you know, that's not something that FBI directors do. They have an investigation. They make a recommendation to the Department of Justice, you know, as to the evidence, and then that proceeds. That was odd, to say the least.
Oh yeah, I mean, 2016 was one heck of a weird year.
Yeah.
It's like reality just broke. A lot of people like to mention that the CERN Large Hadron Collider went off.
Right.
And then, you know, we get the whole universe is in disarray. But I want to mention something too.
Sure.
A lot of people don't understand, I think there's a lot of people who want to believe in a lot of conspiracies. You'll see like a meme photo and they'll list a bunch of names and then draw lines and connect them. Okay. I actually go through those names and I look up the records of the individual where they worked. And I've looked into a lot of those memes and I'm like, it's just, you could draw this, you could do that to almost any person in a high profile position. There's this new one going around where, the San Francisco Gay Men's Choir, they recorded this video where they said, "We're coming for your children." And it's a creepy video. I think it's really creepy and purposefully antagonistic, like to an extreme degree where they started getting serious hate. They took the video down. But 4chan's coming out and digging up their names from the choir and then connecting them to the sex offender list. I was like, okay, let's see, like, if some of these things are true. And they do these memes, they show the name, they connect the line, and then it's not legitimate. It's not real. Far be it from me to say that 4chan's got it wrong, but they certainly don't have enough evidence yet.
Yeah.
So you gotta be careful about these meme things that go around, because I've tried to dig up stuff on this, and it's just not there.
Look, I used to be, you know, one of these people, that whenever you would watch, you know, the Oliver Stone movie, JFK, I'd think, well, that's interesting, you know, but, I mean, you know, like, come on, you know, was there really anybody else besides Lee Harvey Oswald, right? I will just tell you that in light of the litigations I have been involved in the past, you know, 4 to 5 years, with respect to representing George Papadopoulos, and Carter Page, you know, and Rudy Giuliani and Tulsi and Kyle and now January 6th.
Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347.
There's a lot of narratives that are turn out to be just completely and totally fake, and they end up being just destroyed after a period of, you know, 3 or 4 months, whether it be, you know, the Russia hoax.
Exactly.
Those are
conspiracy theories too. That's a thing, you know.
Yeah,
unless you have the hard evidence that you can put out and you can definitively draw those lines.
Yeah.
You know, I just say, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm just in light of the things that I am, you know, learning as a lawyer, probably most involved in the January 6th cases. And again, you know, we'll let juries decide what happened there. There's just a lot of questions
with respect to Ashley Babbitt. We still don't know the name of the individual who fired on her, who shot her.
Well, I mean, some people think that they know. I've seen allegations,
but nothing's been confirmed.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, they have not officially named, the person who fired that shot. Why is that? I mean, where's the explanation for why?
I would say because as political imprisonment is a type of thing, so is political protection, and both.
Yeah, and the issue is if this was kind of, you know, look, just, I mean, imagine, I think, I mean, if it was converse, in terms of the politics, I don't think that guy would be strung up in DC. Exactly.
Yeah.
That name would not be, you know,
his house would be burnt to the ground, his business,
paraded.
You know.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. They go after him like crazy. I mean, there was a report from the New York Times where they went, the Portland rioters, where they're marching around. stopped at some guy's house and then started like yelling at him for him to come out. They threatened to burn down his home for simply waving an American flag. So of course we know if there was a bunch of, you know, let's just call them pink hats, like that when they shut down the congressional building that one time and they occupied, or when they're banging on the doors of the Supreme Court to get the door open, if one of them took a hit.
Yeah. Woof. Well, it's also like, look at the Brett Kavanaugh, confirmation hearings.
Right. Banging on the doors.
They were trying to shut down that. Yep. You know, they were trying to shut down that. And where's, you know, where
insurrection.
And let me touch on the insurrection idea, okay? Because that just from a legal standpoint and a factual standpoint, I mean, that is nonsense. Because, hear me out, which is just that's an actual crime. I mean, insurrection's a crime.
Yeah.
And you can be sure.
Can you be charged with insurrection?
Absolutely.
And none of them have been charged with insurrection.
Zero.
Oh, okay.
So
such ridiculous theater,
you know,
man.
So you can be sure that if the federal prosecutors felt like the elements of the crime of insurrection were met, I'm confident out of 550 cases and counting, probably going up to close to 1,000 at some point, there would be some such charge.
For those that are listening and not watching, because we do the podcast, John held up a zero sign. Yeah, just none. You know, we saw the Capitol Police. They're expanding nationally.
I saw that.
I've heard some other rumors too, but just for now, it's like they're going to set up a couple offices. I have a soft prediction in that I think once they get all of the people who are actually in the Capitol, they're going to go after material support. They're going to be like, our mission isn't over. We got to track down these extremists who are providing material support for these individuals who engaged in insurrection, blah, blah, blah.
It doesn't seem right now like there is much of an end in sight. For a little while there, it felt like, and I'm not sure if I felt like I heard this from you know, the DOJ or from a prosecutor at a public hearing, but it kind of felt like they were preparing to wind down with respect to rounding folks up, you know, that they might charge another 100 or so folks, and it might be, you know, 550, 600 that are charged. It seems like they're almost reinvigorated right now with respect to you know.
They need this. They absolutely need this.
Well, nothing. Look, the country's obviously the country's not going, you know, very well with respect to, you know, inflation and with respect to foreign policy and with respect to all kinds of things. So, you know, there's a narrative that
we got an election year coming.
We do.
Republicans are predicted by many to sweep. I mean, I think even 538's already saying the Republicans are expected to take control of the House.
I'm not an expert.
Then they'll impeach Biden. No, they won't. Republicans are too weak.
I'm not an expert, you know, political analyst. But the regular people in the middle of this country see what's going on every front. They all want a basic degree of law and order. They all don't want to see their, you know, gas prices go up to, you know, $10 or whatever it might go up to. You know, they all want to feel like we do not live in a authoritarian surveillance state. And so I believe it's going to be a huge, red wave in 2022.
Do you think the Republicans should impeach Joe Biden? Wasn't it Marjorie Taylor Greene? She was like, she introduced a bill to impeach him already.
Yeah, you know, I think it'd be reckless to say at this point. I mean, here's the thing that's happening. It's bad in the last several years in this country. And this is what brought down the Roman Republic for sure is the weaponization of criminal law to attack, political opponents. Because what happens is that becomes a vicious, vicious cycle that descends into violence and retribution very quickly. Because the political pendulum will swing naturally.
What's the inverse? Or if Republicans don't fight back, then basically Democrats just keep wielding power unethically.
Well, Republicans have to fight back, and they, you know, metaphorically, they have to fight back, and they have to fight back, you know, extremely hard on every front. But politics is a, you know, again, metaphorically, politics is a street fight. And they have to be tough. But, you know, I'm a lawyer. You know, I'm a huge believer in the rule of law. I'm a huge believer in our constitutional republic, and in our constitution. And, you know, I believe that, you know, the right, conservatives, have to do it in a proper way, because, you know, if it just goes back and forth, with everybody just tossing out the Constitution and just using every possible weapon to destroy their political opponent, I mean, there will be no end to it.
Joe Biden lied about being involved in business dealings with his son.
I'm no fan of Joe Biden whatsoever.
There are photos of Joe Biden standing with Hunter Biden's business partners from Mexico. There's the communications. There's the witnesses. This is well above and beyond.
We can't enter this period where we're like, you know,
we have evidence that Joe Biden lied and was engaging in selling his name and power, but we're not going to impeach him because then we'd look like the Democrats for what they did to Trump unjustly.
Yeah. No, and make no mistake. When I say, you know, sitting here right now for me to advocate impeachment might be a little bit reckless. What I'm saying is, you know, I haven't personally taken the time to look, you know, to look at the, you know, the hard drive and to look at the actual evidence. You know, obviously I've heard a lot about that. And if the things that, you know, seem to be on the hard drive are accurate, which they seem to be, then yes, impeachment would absolutely be
It's 100%. Matt Taibbi dug into the Ukraine stuff. There were multiple, I think at least a dozen criminal investigations into Mykola Zlochevsky and Burisma. And Joe Biden got him shut down tit for tat. If you want the money, you shut this down.
$1 billion.
They absolutely were going after Biden's interests. We know because of, what was the name of the confidant for the Biden family guy who came out?
I don't remember his name.
Matt.
What was his name?
Some weird name.
Bubliano or something like that.
Yeah. Look, this confidant comes out and says.
And he seemed extremely credible, by the way.
Yeah. But outside of that, because obviously I can't remember the guy's name, I'll discount that bit of evidence. But when I was covering a lot of this, I was looking at international news sources, I was fact checking, I was looking at all of it. It is beyond a reasonable doubt. Zlochevsky flees the country. There's investigations to him. Biden says we got to get a new prosecutor in because that one's corrupt. And he wasn't going after the corruption. The new prosecutor comes in. Burisma guy comes back to Ukraine. Investigation's over. You're free to go. Your money's been unlocked. Don't worry. Papa Biden came in and saved your butt. Donald Trump gets in. Dude flees to Monaco. It's like you got to be a special kind of dumb or liar. So we look at what Donald Trump was accused of. Please investigate this crime. We must impeach him. They impeach him over it.
Yeah.
Now we actually see the photographs because of the laptop where Joe Biden is standing with his son's business partners. What did he say to us? I have never talked to my son about any of this stuff. It is beyond a reasonable doubt based on the investigations that I've done. And there's still so much more evidence from that laptop that has not been released. I think Republicans should, first thing they should do is they could get in and just impeach the guy and then let it all lay out in court.
If I'm in Congress in 2022, I think, you know, there would be a very favorable ear, coming, you know, from me on that front. So
Matt Taibbi is no conservative, you know, and he investigated this and he said the claims that there were no investigation of this are just wrong. Like, none of these people actually did any legwork. No, it's obvious. Mm-hmm. What did Twitter do with the laptop storage for an election?
Well, that's where I was going to kind of go.
They're obviously lying.
Look, it's to the point where it's I think it's criminal, you know, conspiracy that the big tech companies are involved in, likely with foreign, powers, to decide, to just cover these things up. I mean, for them to make the New York Post story about the laptop just go completely dark for, you know, whatever
month,
it was, a couple weeks before the election.
A couple weeks after.
Yeah. I mean, what is that other than blatant interference with the election?
What if it was domestic, that they're colluding with domestic powers? Would that also be criminal or is that legal then because it's American CIA or whatever?
I gotta tell you, it's not my field of expertise with respect to the law or anything, but it's got to be in violation of some, federal criminal statute for a private entity to intentionally try to cover, some of that stuff up. What actually, as I speak out loud about it, I think one legal theory that has started to come to the fore, which I think is probably a good one, is that it's actually a campaign finance violation. Because I think there have been lawsuits filed about this because they are, and again, I'm not a campaign finance expert, but certainly what it seems to be is them providing an in-kind contribution right. to the campaign that is, I assure you, was probably not reported and it was, you know, probably worth
I think it would be more criminal. Suppression is different from promotion. You know, if they're promoting an ad about Biden for free, then you can argue they're giving him an in-kind donation. Suppressing negative news, That's something else. That is causing, I mean, you've got some civil torts there, I suppose, with harming the New York Post under false pretenses and defaming the New York Post. The New York Post should have sued for defamation when they said it was hacked materials, and the Post said repeatedly it was not hacked.
They absolutely should have, and obviously, you know.
They still can, right? It's not been that long.
Yeah.
What's the statute of limitations? It differs
by jurisdiction. Sometimes it's a year, sometimes it's 2 years.
They still got time.
Certainly at least a year. But, you know, like we talked about, I mean, people like James O'Keefe have started to, you know, step up and start to sue, you know, these companies. You know, it's got to be those big organizations that have resources to do it, because regular Americans, you know, can't do it.
All right, so here's what we need. New York Post, why aren't you filing defamation against Facebook and Twitter for claiming that the materials you had were hacked, even though you stated several times they were not hacked materials? They lied to the public, and they used it as a pretext to cause harm to your business. You've got clear damages in the amount of views you lost based on the size of the story and the percentage of suppression on the story. If they said they're suppressing it, file some kind of suit against them. Go in discovery. I want to see their algorithms. I want to know what percentage you were suppressed. Hey, make that information public. Then we'll know how much money you lost. Then we'll actually have a claim against them, or the people will actually get to see someone fighting back. Well, the New York Post hasn't done that. I don't know why. The other thing is, Joe Biden should be impeached. Just bring it on, Republicans. Win in 2022. First day. The first thing should happen, they should rubber stamp that impeachment, send it to the Senate.
Hey, I'm not going to stand in the way of Joe Biden impeachment.
But you know what? They're going to love it. They're going to be like, oh no, now Kamala Harris is president.
There's that too. You know, there's also the, sort of.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happens.
Well, there's also, you know, the 25th Amendment lurking in the background. There's obvious, you know, health issues that are, you know, lurking in the background.
Have you seen the photo of Lori Lightfoot meeting with Biden?
I'm not sure that I've.
She's got this look on her face of just like, oh no. And some people were claiming like, that look when people finally meet Biden, they realize this guy is broken. Like, it's worse than we realize.
It seems to have accelerated, yeah. even since the inauguration. I mean, you know, he's over there, you know, traveling Europe, and I think he was giving a speech before the British military, and it's like literally a sentence can't be put together. And that's
he was able to say true to not a shot under pressure. I mean, that's a hard word for me to say.
What was the word again?
True in and on a shabba de pressure. I had to try really hard to figure out how to say that word. And then,
is that
let alone,
like super fragilistic expialidocious?
He said it. Yeah. He said true in on a shabba de pressure. He also said Batacath care.
Perfectly.
Yeah. True international something under pressure.
I don't know.
I'm going to have true in on a shabba de pressure.
I'd like to hear him rap. Like, he could probably rap pretty well. No, but
he could give Eminem a
yeah. Were you true in a non-shabba de pressure? He didn't say that intentionally. That's the point.
If the New York Post,
he wouldn't make it 9 miles, right? 9 miles.
If the New York Post went at Biden or sued Twitter rather, and then it came out that actually the CIA instructed us to do this, so now would they have immunity?
God, I mean, there's so many like fundamental constitutional issues that it raises if this national security state was involved in that. I don't even know where to begin.
Isn't it true though that Democrats in California were telling Twitter who to ban?
I have heard that story, and I have to believe it's probably correct. With some of these things, I'm so busy with some of these cases that, you know, I don't have time to do the same kind of, you know, research and really look at the raw data, you know, that might be useful. But it would shock me if that weren't the case.
I have to pull it up because we talked about it before, but basically there were communications between Democrats saying like, hey, yeah, look at this, and they're like, yeah, oh, we'll get rid of it.
Look, I think there's no doubt that, look, all of these things are connected. I mean, the radical left has overtaken, you know, essentially every major sort of institution in the country, from academia to Wall Street to Silicon Valley to, you know, now
federal law enforcement
and
was it Mark Milley?
Oh, that's
Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Don't get me started. I mean, I love to get started. That was disgraceful. As I mentioned to you before the show, I served in the 1st Cavalry Division in the mid 90s, and I was airborne, and I'm extremely proud of that, and I love this country. For a 4-star general to buy into this critical race theory, you know, garbage that is so toxic and so poisonous and is tearing this country apart. It's sickening. You know, the United States military has one job and one job only, that is to close with and destroy the enemies of the United States.
You know, the most worrying thing to me about what Mark Milley said was that it shows we have a 4-star general who is inept and incapable of critical thought. And right, you know, here's a guy who's supposed to be thinking and like analyzing the battlefield and instruct, you know.
But that should not surprise you in the sense that in a peacetime military. When I say peacetime, I mean a peacetime military with respect to great power conflict. Yeah. The best and the brightest of the officer corps does not rise to the level of general. The best and the brightest of the officer corps, you know, serves their 4 years honorably, and then has the ability to go out and do some more creative, interesting things in the private sector. I mean, the people who rise to the level of general in a peacetime military, as we classically know from the Civil War, are
political.
Not. They're political. They're PowerPoint. They do PowerPoint presentations for a living. Ugh. Essentially, they do PowerPoint presentations for a living.
So what happens if a war breaks out?
We have major, major, major problems. I mean, look, historically, again, you go back to the Civil War. I mean, the Union had massive problems with terrible generals in the beginning of the Civil War. And it just, it's huge. Now with this sort of wokeness layered on top of it, there will be another major power conflict. It will probably be sooner rather than later because of the weakness we now portray to the world. And we're going to have a problem, because of the sort of the wokeness in the Pentagon and the attempt to, make it a social experiment, diversity engineering, training program or whatever they're doing. It's bad.
Yeah. So,
if China invades Taiwan tomorrow, and don't be surprised if it's not too, too far away. Hmm. Let's hope they don't. But if they do,
Let's throw a little bit of Rome in there. Was there like a war conflict with Rome during their collapse? There was, right? Or was it barbarians?
Julius Caesar, and you might know even more about this, John, was leading his troops up north, and he'd basically conquered all of Gaul. He was returning as like the hero of Gaul, and they were going to try and get him on political charges and put him
that's
away.
Right. That's right. So what started happening in the Roman Republic is that so when you were in Rome as a leader, you were immune to kind of lawfare. You were not allowed to, do this thing where you just bring like lawsuits and lawsuits and lawsuits ever. But once you were out of power, then they could do that to you, and they started to do that. Julius Caesar being seen as the threat that he was, being outside of Roman territory, and at that point being a military leader, not a tribune or anything like that, he had the classic choice to make as to whether to cross the Rubicon with his army. and he made that choice because, he was facing political and probably physical extermination, or he was going to win. He was going to win or he was going to lose.
That was the thing about threatening to impeach and use political things to go after your political opponents, that eventually one of them is going to snap. And that's what Caesar did. He crossed the Rubicon, which is basically the was it a wall or something?
No, it's a river. I think it's more of a stream than a river, but it's a very famous stream.
It borders Rome, and it's symbolically you are not allowed to bring military troops beyond the Rubicon.
That's correct.
That violates Roman. But he did it. He was like, it's either I don't and they arrest me and they destroy me, or I take control of the city.
That's right. And look, at a certain point when, tyranny becomes extreme enough, it creates the conditions, for certain things to happen.
What if we're in the calm before the storm? A lot of people thought that 2020 was the time at which Trump was facing all these charges. So would he cross the Rubicon? The left is trying to claim that he did with January 6th, but he clearly did not. But what if 2024 is when, because maybe Trump said, look, we're going to run again. We'll run in 2024 and we'll win. We're going to win back the House. We're going to run again. We'll win. But what happens if something happens and Trump doesn't win?
We have, I think, social media. You can't take the Capitol. That doesn't exist anymore. Our government
ridiculous.
Is decentralized now. So there's no place to march troops into. It would have to be like some organized digital cyber.
You'd have to shut down all communications.
Take over. Yeah, it'd be crazy.
The chain of command
organized thing. What do you think? I think one guy doing that right now.
Certainly 2024 is, we used to say that 2016 was going to be one of the most important elections ever, and then 2020 was going to be one of the most important elections ever. 2024 is going to be.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S.? With more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S., they have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast-growing trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Extremely high stakes. I happen to believe that, and I like Donald Trump. I'm a big Trump fan. I hope that he runs again. I think he has unfinished business, and I think he can turn the country around. I personally believe he is going to win by such a massive margin in 2024 that, you know, we're not going to have issues, and I pray that that's
I agree. At least for now. We'll see. It's very, very early on.
It is.
We're in one of the worst years for political shows. So this is for everybody you can understand. I tell people, like, the year after the presidential election, it's just like your lowest traffic, lowest ad rates. It's brutal. Then you get the midterm, which everything improves. Then you get the campaign, the primary year for the presidential in 2023. So then it's like everything picks back up, and boy, our election year is great for political content, but we're in that lull. So we have so much.
I think you're going to have a really good 2024.
I don't think
for
I'm not entirely convinced. I think people need to understand that 2016 was insane. How insane it was. I was in San Jose, and I watched this mob outside a Trump rally chase down some 16-year-old kid attacking
him. Yep.
I saw a guy who got punched in the mouth because someone said he was a Trump supporter, but he was actually a Bernie supporter. I watched them shove an elderly couple in their late 60s to the ground, grab their MAGA hats, and set them on fire, cheering. I watched a guy walking out going, "Yay, Trump," and a guy runs up with a bag and whacks him in the head with it. I filmed this video. It gets a million views in a day. That was, I think, 2015.
Yeah.
That's how insane things were. Then we get 2020. Look at what happened with January 6th. At the very least, a riot at the Capitol. Insane. And I keep telling people, I see no reason for this to de-escalate. Now you're getting the brunt of the federal government going after Trump supporters. Do you think people are sitting there just being like, "Well, it sucks, but I'm going to calm down"? Or do you think they're being like, "Stop and leave me alone"? Now, I'll tell you, the funniest smear against me, the SPLC, posted this tweet of mine where I said something like, "I think we've passed the point of no return. The bridge has been, the nation has been so divided we can never go back, and civil war seems inevitable." And I was quoting a story. I was actually quote tweeting somebody, and the story said that, like, far right groups wear t-shirts calling for a second civil war. So basically, I'm like, the news reported these far right groups are driving around demanding civil war, and I'm like, feels like a civil war is going to happen, and they criticize me for it as if it was my idea. Listen, it's gotten so insane in this country.
It's bad.
And right now we're in this lull year. Mm-hmm. So it feels like everything's maybe chilled a little bit. But look what they're doing with the 1-6 commission. Look what they're doing with setting up Capitol police offices. When we get in the midterms and the Republicans are looking like they're going to win, the Democrats are going to start ripping their hair out and banging their faces on the wall, screaming at the top of their lungs. 2023, when Trump gets back up on stage and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I am running for president one more time." And everyone goes, "Wah!" and screams, cheering, and they're throwing drinks in the air, whatever. The Democrats will start pulling their hair out again. It is going to be worse than we saw in 2016. It is going to be worse than we saw in 2020. I'm saying these things to be pessimistic. I'm saying there's going to be a conflict. Understand why. Maybe it will be like the scale of conflict. We don't know. But come on. I love this. I've talked about the potential for civil war. There's been a bunch of studies. Some national security experts, there was a story, I think it was in The Atlantic, said that they estimated between 35% and 95% chance of a civil war in the United States. And I thought that was insane.
It's like 1 to 99% chance.
No. It was because there was like 16 people interviewed. There was a wide range of what they thought. But the average was something like 65 to 70%. So then I have people say to me, they're like, "So, Tim, remember last year when you were saying that, that we were headed towards a civil war? Yeah, what happened with that? And I'm like, a bunch of people rioted at the Capitol. And they go, oh. I'm like, did you think that things calmed down since then? So a few years ago, when I was like, man, if this stuff keeps happening, it's going to get worse. Now we've got the 1-6 stuff going on. They're going after all these people. Do you think that when they go after that little old granny where the cop holds the door open for her and threatens her? Or how about when the feds went to that Alaska woman's house and kicked her door in or whatever?
Is the wrong person?
Wrong person. Yeah. Do you think regular people are sitting back like, this is fine? Or do you think people are being antagonized to the point where their brains are going to explode?
You made me think of that meme with a dog sitting in the house on fire going, this is fun.
Yeah, I totally agree that the level of intensity is being ratcheted up, to a very dangerous extent. And I agree that it will continue to do so in the current course that we're on until 2024. So I totally agree with you that we're going to see, we're going to see the same kind of and probably more conflict during the election than we did in 2016 and 2020. Yep. I just believe and I hope and I pray that, you know, Trump wins by such a margin that, you know, it kind of puts everything,
A 49-state landslide.
Hey, I really think it could be. I really think it could be big. I think that, you know, like you said, regular. I think the left terribly underestimates regular Americans, and I think when they think that they have an advantage, they press it and they overreach very much.
But I've heard a lot. There's been a lot of historical comparisons. So obviously, we're talking about Rome and crossing the Rubicon. But I mean, are there really that many similarities, or is it just like a few things that people like to reference? Right.
You
talked
term,
about
you mean,
lawfare.
Mean terms
you talk
of,
about.
I think it's I forget who it is. I mean, one of my second or third favorite podcaster after you, Dan Carlin, has a podcast named Hardcore History, and it's really, you know, amazing. And he's, you know, big series on Rome, big series on Genghis Khan that he calls him, that I love, and Alexander the Great, who I'm a huge fan of. But he's fond of saying that, you know, history doesn't necessarily repeat, but it rhymes. And it rhymes because human nature, you know, is eternal. And you know, there are trends and forces that change. You know, there are individuals that rise to significance who have such a force of nature that they can, you know, alter things. So, you know, you can't say, hey, we're exactly in a situation that the Roman Republic is in, and we're heading the exact same direction and outcome. But there are definite similarities for sure that we should draw lessons from, you know, and try to avoid, you know, certain.
A lot of people have likened it to Weimar Germany.
Yeah,
some people have likened it, but some people have likened it to the Spanish Civil War.
I think the 1930s comparison to, you know, to the threat of the Third Reich is very apt in the following sense, which is, you know, and people are talking about this, some of them, but I don't think enough are. But I think that the Chinese Communist Party is an existentially dangerous threat to us and to freedom in the world right now. I don't think we're paying enough attention to it. I don't think we've been serious enough about it. I think we need to completely decouple from China, and we need to isolate them and be building an, a sort of an alliance of liberty that Steve Bannon, one of my other favorite podcasters, likes to say, with, you know, nations like Japan and India and Australia, and we need to be preparing for things with respect to that.
One of the things about the German, how it reminds me of Weimar Germany, is the burning of the Reichstag, which happened right after Hitler got into power. I think it was 1933. The building, the Capitol, Parliament building, burned down. And he blamed the communists.
Yeah, that was a false flag.
Apparently, no one's been able to prove, and they've done the math, and they're like, there's no way one guy could light the whole building on fire.
But it's an American conspiracy theory.
So theories have arrived that he burned his own Reichstag down and then used that as a reason to lock down the entire country and start stripping them of their civil rights.
What was the special security bill that was passed because of that?
Appeasement Act? Is that what it's? No.
An act that was passed in Germany.
I it's on the tip of my tongue.
Starts with an A. You got it.
Yeah. It's on the tip of my tongue.
I don't know the answer.
Abling Act.
Yep. The
Enabling Act. That's what it was. It was so close. It starts with an A. I'm like, Enabling Act.
The Enabling Act. What a nice, benign name.
Yeah, sounds good.
That was his excuse. He's like, we need more power. We need to start arresting people. And we're watching similar things. And it's now, so like you said, it doesn't repeat. It rhymes. A lot of people come out and they're like, oh, Nazi Germany. I'm like, look, it's going to be different, but it's going to be similar in a lot of ways. What are we seeing? We have an ideological faction. Demands purity. They are racial identitarians. They want law based on race, and they are indoctrinating children. lot of similarities there.
And then 1-6, you've got, I don't even like saying 1-6, makes it sound like 9-11, but like this thing, I don't know that it was a false flag. I've heard that there were police officers involved with letting people into the building.
That's a fact.
That's a fact.
That is, yes. That is a fact. Yeah. So that is a fact. I have one client named Alan Hostetter, former police chief from Orange County, and he might be someone you want to have on a show someday to talk all about this, because he's happy to talk all about it. But, you know, he is an individual, who seems to have had federal agents around him for a long time leading up to January 6th. And so, you know, there's serious questions.
There's numerous videos, yep, where the police opened the door to allow people in. In one video, a cop says
they were urging people. Yeah, sometimes they were letting people in, sometimes they were urging.
Cops are taking selfies with people. Mm-hmm. They're like, "Hey," in one video a cop says, "Don't agree with it, but I agree with your right to protest." As people walk past them waving.
So it could have been just mass disorganization, or it could have been intentionally like, hey, we can use this as an excuse to impose a lockdown.
I think y'all are missing the bigger picture. The police were in on it. Each and every one of those Capitol police officers were like, we're going to let all of our Trump MAGA friends in the building. So each and every one of these cops, why aren't they being investigated? Why aren't they being indicted?
So I will tell you, we're going to put a lot of Capitol Police officers on the witness stand when we try these cases.
Why did you open the door for these people?
That's a pretty good cross-examination question,
yeah,
Tim.
Yeah.
It really is.
Does the jury hear that question? What's it going to say? Here's a video of you opening the door and letting them in.
I wanted to avert a riot. That's what I would have said. I wanted to avert a riot, so I let them in, so they didn't smash me up
okay
at the gate.
Okay, is it trespassing?
Not if I let them in.
Haven't you seen the episode of Simpsons where I think it's Wiggum or someone tells Homer that if someone enters your property, you can kill him? And he goes, "Hey, Flanders." And then he goes, "It doesn't work if you invite him in." He's like, "Aw."
Right. What if you,
that does create an analytical legal problem.
What if you invite them in under duress?
What does that mean?
Meaning that you fear for your life, so you let them pass.
Like, someone,
you're like three levels into the movie Inception on that one.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm the cop, and it's not that I'm like, hold on, come over here and go in. I'm like, these people are going to break me up.
If someone is at the front of your building and they have like weapons and they're threatening you, and so you're scared and you open your door, then I understand. In these videos, quite literally, it's a bunch of old people doting about, waving little American flags, and the police just open the door up, stand aside and say, "Don't agree with it, but agree with your right to protest," as people walk in. There's another video where the cop literally just opens the door and one cop poses for a selfie with people. Like, dude, you're not going to tell me that's duress. Now, I think those cops got in trouble, right? The selfie cops?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
I do know there's another video that just came out that appears to show folks sort of frantically changing into, different attire, sort of under trees.
I've seen that. There's a video where one of the first breaches in the building, they were all in black clad, blackout gear to obscure who they were and their identities. And that's not a typical thing of Trump supporters.
That certainly is not.
But there were a bunch of Trump supporters who said they were going to dress like Antifa. So
the key thing is, and again, I have to discipline myself to be careful about talking about the merits of these cases. But I mean, the important thing is, where's the video? Where's the 14,000 or 15,000 hours of video? Now, to be fair, the Department of Justice and the prosecutors, say, and I believe that they are in the process of setting up sort of a massive, sort of database in the cloud that will have all that video that will allow defense counsel, to search through it. That, is still going to take a long time to get set up, and it's going to take a massive amount of time to review, all of that, because we need to review all of it to understand, what happened that day. I also believe we should be seeing some video from before and after, that day. I mean, why is it just relevant? What the video shows for January 6th, January 5th and January 7th.
I think it's important to point out there were violent people, lots of them. There's a lot of video that's ridiculous. There are people throwing the barricades out, storming up and ramming police. We had Richie McGinnis, I think. This guy's everywhere. Was actually squeezed in between rioters shoving against these cops, and one cop's like screaming as he's being crushed. So all that stuff definitely happened. Now the problem is the Democrats on the left show that. And they say, look. And I think it is partially a problem that many on the right are just like showing the cops opening doors. Let's talk about all of it. They were bad. There were people there engaged in very bad activities, right? But there are a lot of people who are being charged when they were essentially welcomed into the building confused and understanding what was going on.
That is just accurate what you just said. Very interestingly, I'm not a fan of FBI Director Christopher Wray. I mean, when Christopher Wray was asked, questions by, I forget which Republican congressman it was, and asked, constituents in my district are wondering about these people who were, ushered into the building and, that they're being, charged. You know, how many people are there like that? And, in classic Christopher Wray fashion, he dodged and ducked and prevaricated and simply would not go there. It would not even remotely answer the question.
Because it's political. It's for power. Never let a good crisis go to waste.
That is one of the tried and true tactics of all time with respect to taking over.
Now, I don't think the riot is on par with, like, the burning of, the Reichstag or whatever.
Nothing really got destroyed, did it?
They burned down the building, didn't they?
No, on January 6th.
There were some actual historical artifacts that took some damage when windows got broken in. There was like an old bookshelf or something.
They burned the entire Reichstag. I don't think anyone died during
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter though, because there was something symbolically destroyed. It was the normal process by which they certified the electoral votes. So that process is shocking to people. It wasn't a physical destruction. It was more of a metaphysical,
interrupted the process. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it feels like an attack on the structures of the country's, abstract.
There's actually an interesting legal issue on that front, which we've filed, some motions on, in our cases, which is that it is actually unclear, under the existing case law, as to whether or not, that process that day, the certification of the electoral votes actually qualifies as, legally and technically an official proceeding as that is interpreted under the case law, because those have to have a sort of a quasi, judicial, function to them that it can be argued, did not exist that day. Now that is unsettled. I mean, the courts will decide that. But I really believe, and I've said many times, I think the institutions that really fell down in all of this, so to speak, are the state legislatures, especially including GOP-controlled state legislatures. Because the Constitution's designed to avoid something like this, and it's very clear. If there are questions about, if there are any questions, the state legislatures, can and should, not on January 6th. We're talking about back in, December when the Electoral College meets in the states. They are allowed to, very clearly under the Constitution, simply not send elector or a slate of electors because they feel there are questions. If that occurs, and if no candidate gets 270 electoral votes,
it goes
to the House under the 12th Amendment, where each state delegation gets one vote, and there is a process.
The Republicans don't like Trump.
The establishment Republicans certainly don't like him.
Right. And there's been the insurgent Republicans, the populist Republicans, people who have joined the Republican Party for the first time. When I was at, I was covering one Trump rally in Florida back in 2016. Actually, maybe it was 2015. I'm not sure. But, there was a woman who said, I met a lot of people like this. They had never voted before. They were totally independent. They considered themselves actually to be kind of liberal, but didn't really pay attention to politics. Trump came along and he was saying the things they wanted to hear. And so for the first time they were voting. A lot of people like that joined the Republican Party.
Yeah.
This started to change things, and the establishment Republicans who had a bunch of people who would vote R no matter what for whatever reason, just because they were tribalist, were upset by it. Trump is bombastic. He
rocks the boat.
Yeah, he rocks the boat. He's demanding. He commandeered the ship, and they were more than happy to get rid of him.
There's no question about that. And I do think those new folks, those populist, folks are ascendant in the Republican Party. And I'm one of them, and I hope that they are. But I know you're from Chicago. I'm from Western Pennsylvania. And you recall there was a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania during
that massive one.
Massive. Okay. Yeah. So for 55, whatever the number was, for 55,000 people to show up yelling and screaming at the top of their lungs for Donald Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania. Okay, Western Pennsylvania is historically a very, old school kind of FDR labor Democrat type of area. Socially conservative, but very Democrat. For that many people to show up that ferociously, frenetically enthusiastic for Donald Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania speaks volumes. And I think that rally in 2024 might be, two or three times that size.
Have you heard about those books, about Barron Trump and the last president? You ever hear about those?
I have not. I see that Barron's very tall.
Six seven or something?
I think he's 6'7". That's the most recent thing I've seen.
Is that he's 6'7", right?
He is 6'7".
What?
Trump Tower.
Yeah.
Wow, dude. What if like we're just totally misunderstanding what's going on? And what's actually going to happen is in 20 years, Barron Trump, who's this like 6'10", you know, guy, runs for president. He's like, when my dad was president, he's got this like deep voice, and he wins, and then he rules the nine. No. There's a book from the 1800s called about Barron Trump, and the final book in the series is called The Last President, and it talks about how.
Oh, that's the character's name is Barron Trump.
Yes. Okay. Yep. And The Last President is a book about where I think it's, you know, Trump wins the presidency on November 3rd, 1893 or something. And then the socialists and anarchists from the Lower East Side of Manhattan storm up to his fortress on Fifth Avenue. It's like the weirdest thing. I haven't read it. That's what we've heard. And a lot of people are like, how did something like that happen? So I'll call it a gag conspiracy theory, but there are people who genuinely believe like time travelers went back in time or something like that, something ridiculous. I was talking to Will Chamberlain. It was really funny because I was like, there's a conspiracy theory that people invented time travel, you know, go back in time to stop Donald Trump. And he goes, that's what you do with time travel? Like of all the things you could stop, the killing fields.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. World War II.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, actually, yes. If the Democrats right now had time travel,
oh, for sure.
That's what they would go and do.
That'd be their top choice for sure. And but if as a Gen Xer, if it does happen, it's just got to be the Quantum Leap style time travel. You remember that show?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, it comes on every day after Stargate.
Oh, it's got to be Quantum Leap. Those guys.
But it's at 7 p.m., so I don't get to watch it. I only get to see the intro.
Yeah.
I get to hear Sam go, oh boy.
Those are the days. Say simpler times. To say
yeah,
the
yeah, yeah, yeah. Ziggy says you can't leap until you get reelected president.
Why haven't I leapt yet? Well, there's a new movie. Have you seen the new Chris Pratt movie, Tomorrow War?
Yeah, I didn't like it all that much.
Oh, you weren't a big fan? I think I just love Chris Pratt so much that
Easy Red.
Yeah.
What I didn't like about it was I felt like it was poorly directed, but I really liked the concept and I really liked the attempt at doing a different kind of story structure.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just like. The beats aren't hitting properly with like the humor and the action.
I just have to confess, if it has Ryan Reynolds or Chris Pratt in it, I'm pretty much sold.
Chris Pratt deserves all the support. He's a good dude. You know,
he seems to be for sure.
Stands up for what he believes in to a certain extent. You know, he wore the Gadsden shirt and
supporting
people who are pushing back against wokeness and are successful in Hollywood. That's a really important thing.
And yeah, it's a rare thing. And, he's great in Magnificent Seven, too. Are you a Magnificent Seven fan?
Oh, yeah.
He's just fantastic. Great. He's just great in Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, he does a good job, man. We're going to go see Black Widow on Saturday.
If there could be time travel, that's what I would do, is I would go back and be part of the Magnificent Seven crew with the current, with this new cast.
They all die.
Oh, well.
No.
Yeah.
Not if you went back in time.
No, wait. A bunch of them die.
Well, several. No, not all of them die.
Just a bunch of them.
Well, there's seven, so I think like you know, four of them die. The Mexican guy survives.
Okay, Ethan Hawke and his
Asian guy.
Chris Pratt.
Are these spoiler alerts, by the way?
The bear guy dies. Yeah.
This movie's like 8 years old.
But I think
the Native American guy dies.
No, I think the three that survive are the Mexican guy who was offended of being called a Texican, but you know he's the Mexican guy, and then Denzel survives, and the American, and the Native American Red Harvest survives.
Yeah, that's a cool movie.
Red Harvest is amazing with the moving shots with the bow.
Yeah.
And then he also has the Last of the Mohicans scene with the tomahawk and the knife when he's protecting that woman up on that.
Yeah, good movie.
Oh, it's a very good movie.
Yeah, see, it's not all bad. We're chilling, you know. As much as the world might be on fire, we got good movies at least.
Yeah,
right?
Like I'll see a movie poster, I'll be like, oh, that guy's in this movie. I'm excited, and it's like I don't even care what the movie is. That guy is in it. I want to watch that guy act.
Well, that's
like
how
that
it's
guy.
Always. That's how it's always been.
The
you know?
Power of the cult, man. The power of culture. Like one human, like you were saying, can rise up and alter everything.
I tell you, he's one of those. I mean, as long as we're on it, I mean, I tell you that one of those guys that I see is one of those guys. Is are you a fan of the HBO series Deadwood?
No, I've not seen it.
Oh, Ian McShane, you know, he plays kind of the main sort of bad guy, but with some good traits in Deadwood. But I think, you know, he can tend to be one of those folks. But I'll stop. You're the movie.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's a good bad guy.
Yeah. He's very good. I wasn't a huge fan of, the Pirates of the Caribbean sequels. I love the first one. I think the first Pirates of the Caribbean was just an incredibly good yes. movie. I think the sequels were not that good, and I think he was in one of those sequels, so that's the one caveat I give. But
I haven't seen any of those.
You haven't seen
Pirates
of the Caribbean?
I knew out on movies. I went to theater school, and they were all really anti-cinema. It was very weird.
Yeah.
So I was like, I kind of stopped watching movies.
The theater is a dead medium.
Yeah, they were like, I read plays. I don't watch TV.
The other one that I am just – my favorite TV show ever is Black Sails on Stars. You know, that's kind of like Game of Thrones combined with Pirates of the Caribbean.
Cool.
Oh, that's a terrific, terrific show.
Yeah. So. When are they going to start making a series about January 6th?
Yeah.
I'm half joking, but
I believe there are multiple ones underway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Wow.
There are multiple both series and documentaries that are underway.
Yeah, they just came out with one. I'm not sure what news. Yeah. Organization.
Well,
just
I think that there are. I know that there are a couple. That HBO is working on. So I think one is
Showtime series on January 6th.
Oh my
okay.
gosh!
So it must not be that big of a deal then, because like, are there any movies about COVID yet? Or is it too? It's one of those too soon.
There
too,
was. Yeah.
I think there's there's Plandemic. I think it's called, which is kind of a documentary that I think.
Oh, documentary.
Is about,
but
they like doing these like. It's Hollywood, so they're leftist, and they like doing movies that can push politics through culture. Like when they did, what was that Fox movie where they went after Roger Ailes or whatever?
Oh,
Bombshell.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, Bombshell. Yes. Yeah. Well, there's a couple. Yes, I was thinking of the HBO one where the same, Russell Crowe plays Roger Ailes in the HBO one. I think. But I like Bombshell. I thought Bombshell.
No, right.
Like
right. Yeah. The story about what Roger Ailes was doing. Sure, he sounds like a bad dude, right? But are they going to pick up a movie about like I don't know Antifa burning down buildings?
Yeah, I mean,
they're not going to do that.
They'll wait till it's politically expedient.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well,
same thing with virus movies.
Yeah.
When the left needs to regain control from Antifa, then they'll make Red when Dawn they, U.S.
Yeah. When their own starts to get eaten, which always happens with that kind of political philosophy. But you know, look, with respect to buildings being burned down, and you probably know more about this than I do. But I mean, with respect to like Kenosha, for example, I mean, you know, there were houses, there were multi-level houses. In which, you know, there were spray painting on the houses, you know, please don't burn this house down because there's a disabled person like on the top floor.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't Kenosha, like on, you know, Lake, Michigan, I suppose.
And what did the cops do? The cops didn't do anything about it.
The local and state government of Wisconsin, completely and totally abdicated its most basic fundamental, you know, obligations to actually provide law and order. You know, it's obviously happened in other cities as well with these chop zones and, you know, Chaz zones or whatever they're called.
No go zones.
You know, and that's totally unconstitutional. I mean, that violates the guarantee of a Republican with a little r government.
Yeah, well, the police took away your right to defend yourself.
Right.
And now that you can't, the extremists and the criminals and the rule breakers and the law breakers can do what they want. Then when their political allies take the DA, the police don't even go after the crimes of, you know, that are more extreme. So.
It almost sounds like a system or a plan.
Yeah. If you were saying earlier, the track we're on is dangerous. I think you're right, because that we can't talk about certain things on YouTube. Not that YouTube's the only place to have content. Like, we can talk about it on timcast.com or whatever, but there's things that we can't talk about regarding the chaos that is disturbing that we can't debate.
Well,
dissect, analyze.
America, Ian.
No, it's very unsettling as Americans to have that sensation. I mean, you know, I'm much older than anybody in the room, I think, but I mean, you know, even look, growing up, and even I'm sure when you were growing up, I mean, you just, the sensation in America was that you could, like, you know, really, you know, argue it out and hash it out and like stay up all night in college and like debate anything and talk about anything as long as you're, you know, civil to the other person.
Do you remember Skokie, Illinois and the ACLU?
I know that there was something very relevant with respect to Skokie and the ACLU, but I can't put my mind on
it. It was
right
a
now.
Bunch of neo-Nazis were marching through a Jewish neighborhood, and the ACLU defended them.
And that's exactly – so that's a perfect example, and thank you for reminding me of why I started the NCLU, because the only way to preserve the Constitution is to fight for the rights of those who you despise the most when it comes to their viewpoints. And, you know, right now it happens to be – it seems, you know, it is conservatives that are – you know, needing protection right now, but tomorrow it's going to be liberals. And
you see what China just did with banning LGBT groups?
I did not see that.
WeChat, one of their largest, you know, social platforms, yep, banned a bunch of LGBT accounts. So you can see what power does. In the United States, it just so happens the left communist faction and the Marxists have a lot of institutional authority. And people need to understand this, that there is a massive infiltration of Marxism in the US government. What they need to understand about critical theory and Marxism is it's the idea of the oppressed and the oppressor.
Right.
That is...
that the system is inherently, bad and evil and must be torn down.
Right. So it's not about, like, Stalin sneaking into the government. Right. It's about, quite literally, there are people in the government, the military's doing it, what did we just have? Was it Lockheed? Where they were like, you know, white people got to recognize
Raytheon.
Them.
Yeah,
Raytheon.
Yeah, yeah,
Raytheon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so at our military-industrial complex, our government, our police forces, our army are all embracing Marxist theory. They might not know that, but it literally is Marxist theory.
What's concerning is if it's oppressor and oppressed, and I'm the oppressed, then I overturn the oppressor, then what does that leave? It leaves me to become the oppressor.
It's all meaningless. It's just power structures. It's an ideology that is basically like, how can I describe it? It's like when you look at an atomic structure and you find the one frail atom that when you flick, the whole thing crumbles.
Sounds like fluorine. Yeah.
Well, it's pretty
electrostatic or electroelastic.
I mean, this was known as
hydrofluoric acid.
I mean, what you're talking about is the same as what used to be called critical legal theory, which became actually pretty ascended, you know, at Harvard Law School a couple of decades ago. But it's the same exact idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They want to find a way to demonize a villain, create an other. It's very demagogic, I suppose, and it works.
So what is it?
It's really, really quite smart, because what they'll do is they'll say, you're a racist. And quite literally you have, like, James Lindsay being like, discriminating him on the basis of race is wrong. And they go, racist! It's like, okay. So, yeah. I guess, that's what it is. That's what they believe.
If this theory is oppressor and oppressed, and the oppressor... the powerful are oppressive by nature. Is that part of this theory?
No. So initially with Marx, you have like the class, right? The bourgeoisie, the proletariat, the working class, the elites, the political class, etc. Then you get critical race theory, where they're like white people.
Replace the bourgeoisie with white people, basically, for the race theory. I see.
So now with critical race theory, you have oppressed and oppressors, and the white people are the oppressors, and the people of color are the oppressed.
And is the theory that if you were to remove white people from the equation, that there would no longer be an oppressor?
That white people need to recognize their privilege and give up their power.
This is very disturbing.
It's meaningless because you can't take your skin color off.
Right.
Yeah.
So the idea ultimately is that you will always be an oppressor, no matter what.
All of which, of course, is precisely why we have certain laws that just explicitly outlaw this kind of thing, and it's fascinating to watch some of these state and local governments and corporations attempt to implement laws that are so flatly illegal and contrary to, like, the civil rights laws that were passed in the 1960s, but and they think that they can just get away with it, and they will, unless they're challenged.
Critical race theorists hated civil rights.
Of course.
One of the core tenets of critical race theory is critique of liberalism. They felt that the liberal...
liberalism with a little L.
Right.
Yeah.
They thought that the Democrats and desegregation and civil rights was actually depowering their community. They hated it. They were very critical of the Democrats. First of all, you have the Democrats that were pro-segregation, and then also the Democrats started to say, okay, well, maybe we'll get behind these bills for a variety of reasons. And there was a letter circulated during the Ferguson riots among activists that argued segregation was a plot by white Democrats to force black people to exist underneath the economics of the white system.
This desegregation?
Yeah, right. So what these activists were saying when they were writing this letter, before the end of segregation, when everything was separated, they said black people had their own wealth, their own neighborhoods, their own communities, their own churches, they had their own Wall Street. Along comes the Democrats and say, hey, we should end segregation. It's wrong. And as soon as that happened, you have these two systems where, yes, you have a lot of very wealthy white people, but the black community was building up their wealth. Now they're forced to exist at a lower economic standard to the white people. That what they were basically arguing was, when you had segregation, a black person would run their own restaurant. With the end of segregation, the black person would go work for the white man's restaurant. Now, I think that's a bit silly. You could still have your own restaurant. You can still have your own communities. And I think it's an overtly racist ideology, and the end of segregation was a very, very good thing. But these activists genuinely believe that they believe segregation was something they want. I'll put it that way.
Well, they hate Martin Luther King.
But they know that he's popular among liberals, and the liberals are the ones they can exploit. So they say things like, yay, Dr. King. And I always say this to my woke friends. Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. King, he said, I have a dream that one day my four little children will be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. How are you fulfilling Dr. King's dream?
Exactly.
And they say, you don't even know what he was about. I go, okay, I guess. I don't know. He said those things. So do you think that allowing schools to implement race-based discrimination is helping Dr. King's dream or hurting it?
Wow.
Now hold on.
The path is long. Let's find out.
You're getting a lot of leftists who have no problem criticizing him because it's becoming so prominent and prevalent that they're now much more free to do so. So when we talked about this book that's being taught in school, it's called Not My Idea. It's a children's book where a little white girl is exposed to the truth by her teachers about race. And she's angry with her mom who lied to her. And she screams, I'm tired of you lying to me, mom. Tell me the truth. I see race. And the mom says, oh, no. Then there's a whiteness contract with a white hand reaching out in a devil's tail. Yeah, white people are the devil, they say.
You got to see this portion.
They're teaching this to children in dozens of schools. But in many of these schools, once they get to that portion where it shows the white person as the devil, they stop. They don't show it. And they say, you can read the rest of the book on your own. You know why? It's the insidious nature. If they come out right now and tell children white people are the devil, their parents will flip out. But if they give them the beginning of the book, see, police brutality is wrong. They were lying to you. These liberals might be like, huh, okay. They have to do it slowly, slowly. It's insidious. These liberals are easy to exploit because they look at something and they say, that's unfair. They've got to do it slowly. Once enough liberals support this book, then they'll turn the last page and say, white people are the devil. And then these people go, oh, yeah.
Well, I think these parents and these moms are starting to stand up in these school board meetings,
oh, yeah,
which I think is a very good thing. I think when I was driving down here, I went through Loudoun County, right?
Mm-hmm. It's right nearby.
Loudoun, which is, of course, where they wanted to shut down debate, and then they dragged out the sheriff's deputies, dragged out the parents who wanted to actually finish the period of debate that was called for, right? But, you know, look. The way that these things are going to turn around is that people who love this country and, you know, moms at a certain point will protect their kids. But these folks are going to start running for the school board and they're going to start running for local offices. And, you know, I mean, good people have to get in politics and run for, office because that's where the real power is. That's where the real change comes from, is where you can actually take your pen and you can sign, you know, a piece of legislation. And, I think that's starting to happen. It certainly feels like it's starting to happen.
I'm starting to think that this 100-year experiment of public school systems is showing its cracks, its flaws, and the dangers of putting your kids in a foreign environment and letting things happen to them.
Strangers can tell your kids whatever.
So many bad teachers.
Yeah. Just awful.
Terrible, terrible, old, angry,
evil,
worthless, useless. I'm going to say the worst stuff. No, they're probably fine people, but just not able to handle a group of 30 kids at a time. It was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. I mean, there are states like, you know, I suppose New York and California come to mind where, I mean, the public education, you know, the public school system seems to be disastrous, and it's hard to know what to do. I mean, I think the solution is probably multifaceted. I mean, it involves some degree of school choice. It involves some degree of, you know, getting the funds actually where they need to be to make sure that you can reduce class sizes and, you know, get good teachers in there. But yeah, I mean, we cannot have a system in this country where, you know, and I'm very fortunate that my kids, you know, go to an amazing private school. But you cannot have a system where, you know, a certain number of elite kids, you know, have teachers who are kindergarten teachers with PhDs, and they have an amazing experience. And then you have, you know, the masses of people whose kids are not only in physical danger, but they're being indoctrinated like this.
I mean, voucher program.
Yeah, look, I'm a huge believer in choice and competition. And so, you know, school choice and voucher programs, and competition, you know, generally speaking, seem to me to be very good ideas, very good ideas. I think, you know, the healthcare system also needs, you know, more competition, and whatnot. I think the trick becomes exactly how to implement these things. You know, so that it's actually effective. But what we have right now in these big blue states and these cities, it's just not tenable. So something else has to be
trash.
It's
the cities themselves, man. I'm just so, I am anti-city right now.
It's not a good time of being a big city.
We were outside in the front today with Andy. Andy is a guy who's going to be running all the rec area stuff. He's going to be running the grind bar, and we're going to be setting up events and stuff. So we're standing in the front, and we were trying to plan out, like, so where do we build the mega ramp? Like, where do we put the giant launch for the skate park? And it's not about, look, I understand not everybody can, you know, go out and buy materials for a skate park, but you have space. Right. You can walk outside with your friends and just look at the grass and say, what can we do here? What activity should we have in these cities? It's brutal, man. You live in a cubicle.
Yeah.
Your kids are in a crammed school environment. Teachers don't even know their name. Teachers like, who is this? You're in my class. Miss Wilson, I've been in your class all year. Huh. I can't even tell. I got too many kids.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to live in that.
It's a different, it's awful. You know, different type of versatility.
No, and I think that could, look, I think that you're going to have, people start to, look, people who want to live a certain way and believe in certain things are going to start self-selecting out of the cities, and to be, you know, in places that seem safer and in which, you know, they're not attacked for having a MAGA hat on. And you know, I think that, you know, and obviously with COVID and the way folks have gotten more used to working remotely, I think it's going to accelerate that trend. And that could lead to further, you know, that could lead to further division in the country because, you know, I think we're going to have people sort of segregating themselves away from each other, because there's just too much volatility right now.
Yeah. You know, we're going to go tomorrow, see a movie, hang out, have some candy and popcorn. Then we're going to just relax and enjoy a Saturday. We've been filming it. We make a vlog out of it. We're going to start ramping up doing daily vlogs and everything. But the point is, there's got to be something else to kind of clear your mind and help you focus on other things.
I do music because I want to scream. When I want to exert my rage on someone, I just got to turn it into song. I got to scream with my body's full vigor. And it's a bit of
bad for your vocal cords.
Yeah, but it's good for my mind.
Play the drums, bro.
And it doesn't hurt other people because, like, taking it out on someone else is terrible.
You can't scream in a city, though.
They do it online and their text, and it doesn't.
Yeah,
they can kind of tell when they're reeing on in their text.
But yeah. if you live in a city, like, so
I
lived in Brooklyn, can't have drums, can't play guitar. You can play guitar, but it's like within certain hours because like you hear the pounding on the floor. Then,
and unless you're really good, your neighbors are going to complain.
Yeah, they're going to complain no matter what.
They don't always complain if you're really good.
I lived in an apartment where someone in the building worked graveyard shift, and they're always like, it's like 5 p.m. and they're like, excuse me, I understand, but look, man, I got to sleep. And we're like, we'll do our best because we're trying to be nice. It's brutal.
I listened to Hardcore History and you know, listened to the stories about how Alexander the Great's mom was, you know, like super difficult sometimes. And then after he died from partying too hard, there was like literally like 40 years of warfare among his generals to try to sort things out, which, you know, which makes you feel like, you know, it could be worse.
I heard that he was poisoned. Have you heard that theory?
Oh, well, for sure, that's a major theory. You know, I don't think anybody knows for sure.
I would be surprised if he wasn't at this point.
He had put together the world, you know, the largest empire that the world had seen at that point. And so, you know, so there was a lot of folks with a lot of, you know, motivations to do such a thing. Clearly, he seemed to, you know, like to have a good time as well. You know, and so who knows for sure, with respect to the, you know, the amount of alcohol that, you know, he was, you know, supposed to consume. I would say that the consensus among serious historians is that yes, he was assassinated.
He had led all his generals across, you know, Persia and was conquering the world, and they were like, okay, we did it.
Well,
Alex,
no, they, yeah,
can
they,
we go
well,
home
well,
now
they, yeah,
and
they,
enjoy?
They got, yeah, they got basically like halfway like through India, and they're kind of looking around at like the Himalayan mountains and the snow, and they're like, okay, like, I mean, like, seriously, like, what's the point?
My assumption was he was like, we're gonna go forever, and they were like, no, we have to stop him. One of his generals was like, he's gone too far.
Well, he's one of the most fascinating personalities in history, and he had an insatiable appetite to conquer everything. He was tutored from a young age by Aristotle. His father was one of the most powerful figures of his age that handed him like a Ferrari of an army that was tailor made to take over Persia, essentially. And his mother is one of the most powerful, fascinating, manipulative female characters in the ancient period for sure. And so, yeah, the Alexander Great story is a good one.
Well, how about we ask the audience over in the Super Chats, if you haven't already, give us a little tap of that like button, subscribe to this channel, become a member over at timcast.com, and share the show if you really like it. All right, the first and most important question. Hutch the Wolf says, hey, what happened to the stream last night?
Oh.
Well, we have to be very careful because YouTube is communist, so it's on Rumble. So it's on Rumble, and it's on iTunes and Spotify and all the podcast platforms, but it ain't on YouTube, and that's YouTube's fault. So I'll just put it that way. All right, let's see what we got here.
Oh, this is where you take questions from.
Yeah, we just read the chats and see what's up.
Nice.
Mickey Stone says a new dark matter research facility is being built 2 kilometers underground in Victoria. If they succeed, Australia will have an infinite energy source.
You know,
is that real?
They've been looking dark matter for like 2 decades. And now that I'm studying quantized inertia, I'm wondering if maybe, you know, there's lots of ways to look at something that exists. So like this ball of obsidian, you could write different theories explaining the existence of this ball of obsidian from different layers. Like one's the cellular theory of behavior, one's the atomic theory of behavior, one's the subatomic theory. And they're all right, even though they all are different. So I wonder if dark matter could be explained and there could be theories that explain reality without it.
So you should go to the university.
So yeah. The only thing I can contribute to that answer is that I think if Australia develops it, there could be a lot worse people that develop it. So,
oh, yeah.
You know.
All right. Trevor Schoon says, when talking about crap, critical race applied principles, you said they consider whiteness property. Do you all think they will try to put a tax on whiteness? Do I think? They've been trying to. They've come out and said it's called reparations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if you're like a...
They've also started to, you know, just explicitly provide more benefits to folks who are not white, mm-hmm. whether it be getting a COVID vaccine first or it be certain, you know, financial benefits. So, yeah.
Let's say you're from Ukraine. You moved, your parents moved to the United States, and then they brought you with them as a child. Or actually, you know, Luke's a good example. Luke is from Poland. His family moved here with him when he was young. He grew up here. Why is he paying taxes in reparations for something he had nothing to do with? Because he's white. So some people receive and some people lose. Yeah, that's a tax based on race. All right, let's see. Angry Waffle 2 says, I live very close to Kenosha. My family still lives there. If Kyle gets an excessive punishment, we need to rise up or punishing self-defense will be the norm. Yep. Yep. So people need to, I can't tell you what the most effective thing to do, but organizing, you know, understanding protest, understanding your power in media, understanding your power in industry. You know, this is the funny thing about like January 6th. These people think, and I get these comments from people where they're like, we have to fight. It's the only way. And I'm like, oh, that'll give you control of like institutions and colleges to indoctrinate children. No, it won't do anything. Mm. You need to actually be professional, persuasive, resourceful, and get jobs. And like, you know, people can do. So people want to know how they can fight back. Apply for a job at Google. There you go. Become part.
Yeah. There has to be almost a counter march through the institute, you know, the counter long march through the institutions, to try to, you know, start to take some of these things back. Yeah.
Maximin says, Tim, Facebook wiped all Kyle Rittenhouse and Kenosha shooting content. Search Facebook for his name or Kenosha shooting. Nothing comes up at all. They're in the process of removing search terms related. That's because, well, it's 2 reasons. One, advertisers don't like it. It's not good. And there's probably a political component where they're like, hey, if liberals can't see it happening, they'll just assume the narrative is true. Well, if people watch that video, they're going to be like, this guy's defending himself.
Yeah, I mean, it makes logical sense because every single video shows that he was defending himself. And remember, there's like thousands of videos showing it. It's not just one.
He was on the ground. Yeah. The guy was about to smash his head with the skateboard. Could have killed the guy.
The guy with the skateboard did smash his skull with the skateboard. And could have easily killed him just with that blow. But the person that I think, you know, you're talking about is the person with the Glock who was literally coming down to shoot him, execute him.
Yeah, he's like walking up to him with the gun.
Crazy.
He's got a gun.
He tried to fake surrender.
Yeah.
He tried to fake surrender.
Yep, he backs up.
He tried to fake surrender.
And then Kyle.
What is the precedent like if you go into a mob where people are fighting with a gun and you walk into it, you choose to, and then they start grabbing at your gun and you start shooting in defense? Are you really defending yourself,
yes,
or did you put yourself in a situation where you're the aggressor?
You're defending yourself.
Even though you're defending yourself.
So there's a lot of questions, especially as the analogy pertains to Kenosha. Do you live or work in this area where there's a mob of people?
So that's relevant.
Yeah, it is. If you're supposed to be there or you're defending your community. More importantly, though, just because there's a group of unruly, unlawful people doesn't mean you as a citizen have no right to exist and bear arms.
Or to be there. I mean, yeah.
I got a right to keep and bear arms. So if I'm walking down, I mean, based on what you're saying, Ian, no one in Chicago should be allowed to have guns, period.
It's kind of that argument of if you go into a bear, a cage with a bunch of hungry bears and the bears attack you, are you going to blame the bears for attacking you? Or are you going to blame the guy for getting in the bear cage?
Different.
Similar with what Andy Ngo was experiencing.
Sure, sure. Yeah, but they're completely different circumstances. If you based on your analogy, no one in Chicago is allowed to defend themselves. Chicago is ridden with crime, violence, gang activity. So self-defense is now wrong because you entered this place. Right. Right. That's different than don't go out late at night, you know, because you'll get mugged. You go out at night at Chicago, you know, you run the risk. I mean, I talk to people in Chicago who are saying they're scared to go out at night because of it's just constant. It's getting worse and worse and worse. So many of them stop doing it. Many of them are, you know, people I know are leaving. We heard about San Francisco. 40% of people polled said they were going to leave because of declining quality of life. That's different from do you have the right to defend yourself? If you have to go, let's say you have a big house. And one day you show up and there's a bunch of bears in it. Are you allowed to go in and fight the bears off?
Yeah, because it's your house.
There's a difference between should you go into the house? Probably not unless you can defend yourself.
Good point.
So it's like it might be your house. There's a bunch of bears in it right now. You're going to need some help to clear out the bears in a very, you know, safe way. But if your family was in there and it was like your medicine was in there, let's say you're diabetic and your insulin's in the fridge and you're going to die, it's like you have to go in.
You're going to choke a bear.
And if the bears attack you, you got to learn how to fight that bear with your bare hands.
Punch it in the nose.
Unless you've got, I don't know what kind of gun takes down a bear, to be honest.
Sonic.
I think you need,
a lot.
You need a 50 caliber for sure.
You think a 50 cal?
Well, I think it'd be, that would be your, that would be the very least I think you would need to have a chance.
308 though, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
If like not one, but if you get him in the head, maybe, right?
I would assume so. I mean, yeah, I would feel better about a 50 caliber, I think. But even though I was in the army, you're the one that lives in the country now, and so you're more up to speed.
I don't know. I've not had to fight a grizzly bear. We have a bunch of deer that come here, but we're cool with the deer. They're all right.
There's a first for everything.
We got turkeys all over the place. The turkey shot in the 12 gauge is pathetic. You know what I mean? But like, it does the turkeys in? I guess if they're a nuisance on your property, the turkeys come by once a month. We don't mind them. Yeah. But a bear. I don't know. I think people in the chat are going to know. What does someone say? 338 Winchester? No. 338 WM?
308.
Someone said 308. Yeah. I figured, you know, I don't think 45 don't think would work.
So. No, not a 45.
Yeah, 45. So. Like standard 40, like 45 ACP subsonic. No, it's going to just
irritate them.
Speaking of turkeys, you guys ever hang out like face to face with a turkey before?
There's a bunch of them. They're over outside all the time.
But, like, have you sat within, like, 6 feet of one and just chilled with one ever?
I wouldn't call it that.
I
stood on the porch.
I was in South America, and this woman was housing this turkey to eat it eventually, and he would come up and sit next to us. And they are terrifying because they have huge claws. They're massive. But then you look in their eyes, and they have this kind wisdom in their eyes. I see why Ben Franklin wanted to make it the national bird.
They're like the modern Velociraptors or
that's
something.
True, all right, yeah. Here's a good one. Victor G says, amazing how blue-pilled Tim is on conspiracies and then cannot understand how people can be so blind about how corrupt the media is. Actually, I think you, sir, are the one who is blue-pilled. If there is something as such as like overly red-pilled, I don't know, but there is an idea that when you take the red pill, you wake up from the matrix. But you cannot claim that you've seen a meme and looked at circumstantial evidence and it's been enough to prove something definitively. There is a meme that's gone around for a long time about the Clintons, and it lists all of these names. I have gone through a ton of these names and been like, that's the stupidest attempt at connecting somebody. It's like this one firm once handled a bank account for Bill Clinton and their receptionist. It's like, whoa. They're like, if you've got a company with 3,000 people and someone, could you imagine if it's like, you know, you go to a shopping mall. And then one day someone in the shopping mall turns up dead and they're like, but the Clintons were shopping there.
Whoa.
So coming back to that one, I'll just say that because my firm sued Hillary Clinton on behalf of Tulsi Gabbard, I'm just going to hope that you're correct about that one. So
I just think this latest story with this journalist, it's like he broke a story about Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton, then for years was writing a book about it, then went on a book tour about it, and the Clintons were like, not yet. Not yet. Wait for it. No. What? Like, if they wanted to stop him from writing if they were mad about what he was reporting, wouldn't they stop the book from coming out? It was 6 years later. You can't be like, well, 6 years later, it's, people are looking too much for confirmation bias. And they say, I'm blue. Well, someone said I'm blue pill on conspiracies. Bro, I'm doing the investigations and not finding the evidence. I'm not going to sit here and pretend evidence exists when it doesn't. There's certainly things you can bring up that are creepy, like the painting of Bill Clinton in a dress on Epstein Island.
Oh, that is weird.
Or Bill Clinton flying on the Epstein plane 27 times or whatever. Bro, that's creepy stuff that we know happened. Luke Rutkowski getting on the boat and jumping onto Epstein Island like a lunatic.
Clinton,
what's he
getting
doing?
Freaky at Epstein Island.
Unsettling.
Yep. All right, let's see what we got. Doug Andrew says, greetings, Tim and gang. I'm making it a point to watch your videos on Rumble instead of YouTube. Don't fret, though. I'm still leaving likes on YouTube. All right, well, that's cool.
Thank you.
You know, look, we have to leverage these platforms where the culture war is happening. We can't just abandon them. Because it's where the culture war is happening. So it is a challenge, right? Twitter, however, I have complete disdain for, and I tweet nonsense. Like, maybe that's worse. Because I'm giving Twitter the best content, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I was going to tweet things like, breaking news, you know, Donald Trump did this. Okay, I guess that's like, you know, legitimate, serious content. Instead, I'm posting pictures of goats and stuff, just like, yeah, look at this. Look at this, a deer trying to eat my pawpaw.
Because I can say, one can tell that you're sort of messing with the universe with your tweets sometimes, which is very fascinating, as opposed to Cassandra's just full on attack mode. So.
Following Cassandra is the best.
It is.
All right, let's see. Noah Zork says, although I consider myself an amateur sleuth, I believe I can say with some certainty that the person that fired on Ashley Babbitt was on the other side of the glass.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a video of it, isn't there?
Yeah, of the guy, right? Of the specific... I don't know. Is there actual video of the guy holding the gun, releasing the chamber? Or is it like you just kind of see where the guy is and then...
No, there is video of his hands holding the firearm. He also, I will note that he, interestingly, I think, removes one of his hands from the firearm and seems to take it to his earpiece that you cannot see, but that seems to be the natural conclusion. There are a lot of questions about January 6th. There are a lot of questions about that incident as well.
All right. Zach Goo says, I work at a large trucking company. We haul refrigerated goods, had a meeting today about how our trucks aren't being fixed due to parts on back order. They also said all oil changes are suspended due to oil shortage. I've heard some creepy scuttlebutt about oil and gas.
Oh, yeah.
Just scuttlebutt. Just internet rumors. People could be freaking out. Who knows? We'll see.
So should we order like 60 pounds of WD-40 or something?
No. I for breakfast, I've been having fresh eggs and vegetables from our own garden. It's the greatest feeling when you're like, I eat food of my own creation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the chickens, just like we let them in the farm to eat the bugs. They got our tomatoes, though, but we're kind of happy they did.
Somebody did.
I just drink espresso, and I have to start eating more healthy, so I'm going to come hang out with
but
you.
But it's just a great feeling to be like, we grew we have so many cherry tomatoes off of one plant.
Yeah, I heard you talking about that in the show. It does sound yummy.
I took like 20, threw them in a pot with some olive oil, and then I poured the fresh eggs over the top and let the egg just –
Yeah,
those cherry tomatoes, they just pop there.
I diced
so
a
delicious
zucchini from the garden and sautéed it with like red wine vinegar and salt. Ooh. Dude, it was next level. I put a sausage in there with it and kind of let the sausage grease kind of go in.
Oh, really?
Man, it was good.
That sounded really good. Yeah,
that's the way to live for sure.
That's why I'm saying when people are worried about, there's been food shortages, oil shortages, trucker shortages, gas stations are starting to run dry across the country. It's happening. They say it's not a gas shortage, it's a trucker shortage. I'm just like, say it all you want. Okay, I got some electric bikes, not too fast. I got an electric car. We'll see how long that lasts. We're getting the solar panels and stuff. We have these backup batteries. When the power went out here, we immediately ran and plugged in all the backup batteries, and we're still able to do the show even though the storm knocked out the power.
Very exciting.
But these batteries come with solar panels you can lay out in the sun and plug in, and they charge off solar. It's fantastic. Wow. And they're huge. If you only have like one panel set, it would take like probably 3 days to fully charge the box. But we actually have like, I think we have like 24. So you lay them all out on the ground in the grass, plug it in, and it charges up in an hour or two. And you can run AC off of it. You can run your washing machine off. It's amazing.
Yeah.
These things are fantastic.
Can you run multiple batteries through all, like 24 panels and like 8 batteries? Can you have them all plugged in?
Technically, yeah, but it's not worth it to do it that way. You just charge the one up, then switch it over and switch it over and switch it over, because you'll get some diminishing returns.
Well, yeah. I did hear your discussion about gold on your last show, and a lot of people think about that when it comes to the kind of apocalypse scenario. But your discussion of that was very persuasive. That's not really where you want to go.
Well, gold is where, but I don't think the apocalypse is going to happen.
Yeah,
gold is excellent if you think there's going to be an economy.
Right.
Gold is valuable among humans. But if we're like talking Mad Max,
right.
What do you want gold for? I guess, you know what I mean?
No, yeah, it's useful as a medium of exchange in a marginally functioning society. But
right.
Other than that, it's like, food and water and weapons.
We have been marginally functioning throughout the last 4,000-8,000 years. Even though there's been catastrophe and war,
right.
We still continue
gold persisted to
function. Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, if we nuke ourselves and it's like the last man on Earth, you're not gonna trade someone gold. They're gonna be like, bro, I need water. Do you have water? I'll give you some bread. But even if like there's a peaceful divorce and major conflict, gold and silver are in my opinion, for me, good bets.
It's good to have it's certainly good to have in reserve for sure.
Yeah. I'm definitely interested in precious metals and cryptocurrency, but you've got to balance it. Like, I'm not giving financial advice. I'm just saying, for me, I think it's important to have a balance between some different hard assets, stocks and everything. Because I can't remember who we were talking to. They said if the market collapses, then you need to have some liquid assets so you can move in and out. And
yeah.
But if you put everything in one basket, who knows what's going
to
happen.
Well, you got to be ready to pounce on assets if the market folds, basically, with your
cash. Well, I think what people realize in 2008, 2009 is that, essentially all paper assets can go to hell like in one fell swoop.
All right. We got this one from Dalamar. He says, John Pierce, Matthew Peirce was arrested today for entering the Capitol with a GoPro camera and press badges on. Friends are unsure of his status right now. He was streaming on Twitch and on D Live covering the event. He is going to need a lawyer.
So look, I am here and I'm trying to help, everybody that can, because a lot of people need help. So reach out. Each defendant's obviously in a different scenario in terms of the facts of each case. And again, there's some very interesting things about January 6th. It gets more interesting by the day.
Yeah. The 21.6 talk show says Tony Bobulinski.
There
he is.
The name.
That's the name.
That's the name.
Yeah.
Tony Bobulinski.
We were not actually that close.
No, nope. We were way off.
you were.
What?
Making it. You were.
Couldn't remember. Good.
Pancake Astronaut says, love the show. Trying to create culture. If you could, sir, shout out my metal band, Mind Virus. There you go. Mind
just
Virus.
Did.
Huh. All right. Let's see. Michael Schwobel says, there's a video out there of Trump supporters outside in MAGA hats asking the police why they're not stopping them.
Huh.
Yep, seen it.
That does exist.
He's sure. Yelling at the cop, like, what are you doing? Why aren't you doing anything? And the cop's just like, meh.
That man was fired up about it. Yes. I know
those
that.
Cops were clearly.
You know they were ordered to stand down.
No,
because if they had gotten into altercations and fought people, it would have been the worst optical.
There's video of the cops letting them in.
Yeah, they were ordered probably to not get involved and just be as passive as possible.
Obviously Donald Trump told all the police, I'm the back the blue president. And they were like, you got it. And the cops were like, we're going to make this happen.
Oh, that's another conspiracy theory.
Well, hold on. It's not a conspiracy theory.
Trump's like,
Trump was
in.
The president. Trump supports police. Police let people in and helped facilitate the insurrection. Let's round up all of these Capitol cops. Now, the cops that were defending the Capitol, okay, you guys are free to go. And the cops that refused to intervene or open the doors, we got to get those cops rounded up and investigated, don't we?
I think that there's, from a factual standpoint, there is no question that there were Capitol Hill police that were not just letting people in, but were urging people to come in. And I think that there are very direct and tough cross-examination questions that need to be asked of each one of those individuals.
All right. Let's see what we got. Rob Santana says, Tim, in Tomorrow War – oh, spoiler alert for those that haven't seen Tomorrow War, because here it comes. Tim, in Tomorrow War, they need two jabs to kill the queen in the past – when they could just have blown up the ship in the first place. That's correct.
Yep.
I didn't.
So many questions.
Yeah.
I didn't get that deep in the analysis.
All right, we're going in. You guys ready for this?
Yeah.
Spoiler alerts to the umpteenth degree. For those who have not seen The Tomorrow War, you're not going to want to hear this, but I am going to now tear it to shreds.
Do it.
So The Tomorrow War. It's about a bunch of people, they're chilling, and then all of a sudden a portal opens and people from the future come back to the past saying we are losing a war against aliens and we're going to draft people from the past to fight in the future because we're desperate. Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess. Sure, it's kind of a weird plot, but I do appreciate the uniqueness of it. All right, let's talk about this. So Chris Pratt goes in for testing, and they find out that he's going to die in 7 years. The war takes place in 30 years. They say, you've been drafted. They send him and a bunch of middle-aged people to the future. At some point, someone notes, you notice that all the soldiers that came to the past are very young, and all the people that go to the future are very old? And they go, oh, they're trying to avoid a paradox so that someone in the past doesn't interact with themselves in the future, and the people who come to the past haven't been born yet. And I'm like, oh, except in the movie, everyone's dead in the future. Everyone is. It makes no sense to be like, he dies in 7 years and go to war. There's only 500,000 people left on the planet. So why would they draft a bunch of old people when everyone's already dead? Now, who dies first? In the movie, turns out Chris Pratt, okay, I'm telling you, spoilers.
Just do it.
Chris Pratt's daughter is his little girl, and then he gets drafted into the future, and sure enough, the colonel in command, it's his daughter.
Oh, weird. She's pretty badass.
He says, colonel. And she goes, well, when people start, getting knocked off, you wear a lot of names or whatever. Basically implying that you become colonel when everyone else is killed in the war.
Battlefield
which is
promotion.
To imply most of the soldiers are dead. Why would they draft a bunch of middle-aged fat people like this fat guy to go and fight in a war unless all of their frontline infantry had actually died already? In which case, people from the past who are actually in the military would be the ones to be drafted.
Of course.
Because they'd be like, you're already dead in the future. Now we're going to take you and bring you into the fight in the future. It's ridiculous.
Well, also, what if they pulled someone's dad into the future and got him killed in war before he had the kid that was the soldier from the future?
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. I assure you, I could make a better movie. I could write a better story.
I'm not sure if it's because it's getting late or not, but you're just, it's now like above. Your mind's moving faster than mine is on this one.
Oh, dude, I already rewrote the whole movie after watching it.
Yeah.
I do this with a lot of movies. I'm like, okay, let me rewrite the plot. He was a military vet. It should have been shortly after. They should have been only drafting military. There's a whole lot that should have changed in that movie.
But you will keep Chris Pratt in
the movie. Oh, definitely.
He's so good.
And I thought the daughter character
she's good too,
was really good.
Yeah. Chris is the only reason to watch that movie, honestly. Yeah.
Oh, she was. So I just remember where I saw her. She was in Live Another Day 24, the Jack Bauer.
Interesting.
She played the CIA agent in London. Yes. Talented. That's where I recognize her from.
Zach Robinson says, is this enough to say I'm sorry? Never changed him. I can't believe you read that last night. When is the live chat coming with your live website streams? That would be fire. Free culture war discourse is the best discourse. You could even air at 11 and react to chat. We have a lot of plans, but it's just, I'll break it down. There's a lot of people who need to understand, there's no amount of money that can get you what you want if it doesn't exist, right? I was hanging out with this YouTube guy, and we were in DC, and this was actually on January 20th, it was Trump's inauguration. This guy comes down, and we were talking, and I said, so what did you fly in first class, to get down here? And he laughs and goes, first class, I'm way beyond that. And I laughed and I was like, oh, a private plane? And he goes, dude, I took the train. And I started laughing. It's like, how do you think you get from New York to DC? Why would you spend 5 hours going to get it? Like, just hop on the train.
Oh, it's much more relaxing to take the train.
You walk in, you hop on the train, it's right there, boom, you're in DC.
You're on the ground.
And I was like, oh, there's no amount of money. Like, if you want to get a private plane, it still takes time to go to the airport, charter the plane, get the permissions, get on the runway, you're waiting in line. Trains faster. People don't realize this. So here's what's happening with the website dev. I can go to the developers and say, I will give you all the money in the world. And they say, there's still only so much work a person can do in development. You can't have 10 people designing one thing because then you've got a bunch of code conflicting with each other and no one knows what someone else is building. So it actually has diminishing returns. So there's like actually a happy medium of how many people you can have developing something. So it takes a long time. So we want to have website streams. We want to have so you can listen to the bonus podcasts. We're going to be doing audio-only versions with all the members' podcasts for people who want lower bandwidth and want to listen in areas without high speed and stuff like that. I think Rumble already offers a low-bandwidth version as well, but we want to do an audio-only. It's going to take a bunch of dev. So websites first, then the mobile app. But we're going to have a ton of crazy content. We are going to have we already have technically three shows. You have Tim Pool Show, which is me monologuing. Timcast IRL, which is the conversations. We have Cast Castle, which is the vlog. The next one we're doing is the unexplained and the paranormal and all that stuff. It's going to be epic, and we're going to have that should be starting up in the next month or so. And then we're going to be doing tech, gaming, all sorts of stuff. We're probably going to do like true crime, obviously, but we're going to have a bunch of different shows.
Dude, I'm so excited to do a tech show.
Oh yeah, but we need
weird technology.
So the interesting thing is I think there's an overlap with you, Ian, in like the unexplained show, but there's got to be like the wild world of science with Ian kind of thing.
You just got to go crazy.
So where do you guys stand on like the, you know, the UFO revelations with these Pentagon videos?
I think they're really using it as an opportunity to raise money for the military right now as like a kind of a scare tactic, but also I've been studying these things called talking plasma balls that the military has been working on where they'll coordinate lasers three or more into the atmosphere to trisect them and create a ball of plasma, which is showing up on radar. And then they can move the ball around and they're like, how can a ship even move like that? But it's tracking on radar.
Yeah.
The like actual craft, I think it's Tesla Tech that they've recovered and have been working on lightweight drones since the 30s or 40s.
You ever point a laser pointer at a wall when a cat was in the room? And the laser pointer's moving like in ridiculous ways because you can just like move the light and the cat's just like freaking out like, how is it doing this? That's what we're doing right now. We're like, look at these ships. And it's probably like a guy with a flashlight. He's like, duh. No, for real. Like, you make that point with the plasma balls.
Talking plasma balls.
But even if it's like plasma, whatever it is, it could literally just be that they're in a plane and it's a high powered visible laser moving and they're like, and then it disappears and they're like, whoa. And it's like, you're looking at a light, dude.
Right.
It's how is it moving so fast and turning on a dime and going through clouds and it punched a hole in the clouds. Yeah, high powered laser. How about that?
But the craft I'm really interested in. Like, what are the materials that they make? Bob Lazar worked at Area 51. He saw, like, according to him, like, I don't know, nine different shapes of craft that apparently can move. And I have friends that are Jeremy Riss, the alien scientist, working on anti-gravity. That's a real technology. Like, if you create enough horizontal momentum, you can kind of negate vertical momentum and then move things up. So its idea of spinning things super fast can create
like
the
ability
to lift. And I don't know if air has anything to do with it.
All right, well, let's read a little bit more because I got to read this one. Michael Heilers says 458 SOCOM kills pretty much everything depending on range and load. If anyone's ever seen a 458 SOCOM, oh yeah, they're massive. But I guess so. I don't know. Would a Sabo slug and a 12 gauge work on a grizzly?
A Sabo. If we can talk about tanks, I can tell you a Sabo round would take out a grizzly.
Well, I can't show it on camera, but we'll just
What is a Sabo exactly?
A Sabo round is that's one kind of Sabo round.
We're not gonna.
I'll look at it later.
But a Sabre round is the primary tank.
I'm like showing you. Yeah, right?
I can't switch the camera now.
It's a primary tank killing round that another tank uses. It's an armored piercing fin stabilized discarding Sabre round with tracer, which essentially means Sabre is the French word for shoe. So essentially it's a depleted uranium dart. It's almost like a long.
I'm not talking about that.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about a slug from a shotgun.
No, I'm talking about the big Sabre round.
Yeah, so
that would definitely take out
the
grizzly
bear.
But Sabre means shoe.
So it's encased, and when you shoot it, it breaks out and the slug comes out.
Correct. Do they always have tracers in them, or is that just the military versions?
This is a shotgun slug, so there's no tracer. Yeah. But it's a polymer tip, and it's going to put a 10-inch hole in something. I imagine it would harm a grizzly bear a great deal.
Yeah.
At least
the tank round would definitively kill the grizzly bear.
Yeah.
A lot of people were saying, someone says 12-gauge slug. Some people are saying 308. People are saying show it. This is YouTube. No. We can't. We can only talk about it. To my right, there's some fancy stuff. If only you could see. Actually, there was a photo. People post photos when they go on the show, and you can see them on Instagram.
Yeah.
Luke got me a flintlock pistol.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's not an FFL item, I think.
It's stunning. It should be on display somewhere.
Yeah, it's not a regulated weapon,
on
I think.
Screen.
From like the colonial days, I mean, or the pirate days?
Yeah, something that. I don't know how old it is. Well, it's a replica, I think.
All right, let's see what we got here. The Reaper Nation says, hey, Tim, would you ever consider having Donut Operator on the show? Yes, we would.
Standing invite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he seems great, actually.
Yeah.
Kevin Robillard just posted a bunch of gorillas.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, and we have a new shirt.
Oh, yeah.
This one's mostly for the skate park skate park denizens. But if you go to timcast.com and click store, we have stickers and shirts that it's the Gadsden snake wearing a beanie on a skateboard and it says, don't snake me, bro. So it's a play on, obviously, don't tread on me, and also don't tase me, bro. And it's don't snake me. So snake is a verb in skateboarding or whatever, skate park culture. Everybody kind of waits their turn. So there will be like a rail, and one at a time people will take their turn, and you kind of just, you know, I'm going to sit back. It's very anarchic. It's very anarchist. You know, you're letting people sort of do their thing, but eventually someone just barges in and snakes you. It's when you're about to go and they just cut you off and go and you're like, bro, don't snake me, dude. So we made shirts and it's a little.
That is the one piece of swag I must have at some point someday.
I'm gonna get a bunch of the stickers.
Yeah.
But a lot, I posted it and a bunch of skateboarders are hitting me up on Instagram and they're like, yes, I want the shirt. Like, you're wearing it in the skate park. Don't snake
me,
bro.
I love it. So
yeah.
Much.
Because they do it, man. They do it.
The don't tase me, bro video is just one of a kind.
Don't tase me, bro.
One of a kind.
Yeah. Those were the days, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Trek God says, Tomorrow War, you forget that Pratt's generation would be useless to the present trying to prepare for a future war. Recall that the present still needs to fight. I saw the best meme ever. Mm. It's Chris Pratt from the Tomorrow War holding his gun, which is a short-barreled rifle with magnification on it. And they're going through, like, why someone would be using this weapon. And then it's like someone from the, I can't break it down for you perfectly, but it's like someone from the future comes to the past and goes to a gun store and they're like, we need weapons to fight a war. And they're like, okay, so I'd imagine you're going to want, you know, like an AR-15, you know, standard. No, I want a short barreled rifle. Okay. So it's going to be a short range. Nope. He's like, then he's like, okay, so you're going to want like a red dot. Nope. Magnification. And they're like, huh?
What?
Okay. Well, all right. So these things must be, small and close. Nope. They're massive.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
And they move around so fast that you never actually be able to see them in those circular, like magnification things. Cause you got to line it up.
Magnification.
Yep. Yeah.
I wasn't paying close, but you know what really bothered me about that movie is the infinite bullets they had.
They did not seem to have to reload very often.
See, this is why I really like Stargate SG-1. They use P90s, and they're often in a lot of close quarter situations, and they often are reloading.
Yeah.
And they actually explain P90s and the 50 round the magazine. I think
the Tomorrow War producers are not going to be your biggest fans after tonight. But
yeah. maybe bring
massive attention.
Creative consulting.
I think
it really just is. It's like in The Dark Knight. What did Harvey Dent say? He is
the Batman.
Yeah.
That's filmed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
So when he's talking to the guy in court, and then the guy's like, "I'm the real mastermind," you know, whatever the guy's name is, a fall guy. Then Harvey Dent walks up to him and he pulls out the gun. It clicks, and then Harvey grabs the gun, disassembles it, and then he says, "Like Chinese made 28 caliber. If you want to assassinate a USD, I suggest you buy American." And then, I think he said 28 caliber or something. And I saw that, and you know, before I knew anything about guns, it never meant anything to me. Then I rewatched it and I heard him say that, and I was like, 28? Is that what he said?
Huh.
I looked it up, and all I found were forums of people saying like, what is this? Like, why would they do that?
That's funny.
And some people speculated that producers did it on purpose. Like, purposefully.
Like a 555 phone number?
No, like they knew gun people would make a thing of it.
Don't you also think with some of the movies that are on, let's say the streaming platforms like Netflix and Amazon, that sometimes they're trying to get the content out like so fast don't put the same kind of like time into things that they used to?
I think that's what happened with the Tomorrow War. That was a conclusion I reached because I watched it too, and I reached a lot of the same conclusions Tim did. And I was watching it, and I was like, I bet Tim is overanalyzing every single bit of this stupid movie, but at least Chris Pratt is in it. That's why I watched it.
And correct.
Oh, I saw this move, some Roman show about the Romans, and they were like they were getting charged by the barbarians, and they're like, testudo! And they all went into their arrow protection testudo turtle form, where they're like,
yeah, I like
but
that.
But it's not how you handle a charge at all. You'd get wiped out if you were in testudo formation. And so then the charge came, and they were like falling on top of their, just so, and all the comments like, what historian is on staff with this movie crew that told them a test?
So we've got a pretty tough question for you before we sign off.
I was surprised there wasn't one yet, but
oh no, there's a bunch of them. But I'm just
you're being very diplomatic. He's curating them. Through them. Thank you.
Yeah. But this one, of course, pertaining to Kyle Rittenhouse, and a lot of people want to know. They say that you've been accused of taking money from Kyle Rittenhouse, and they'd like to know if you have a response.
So that's completely untrue. You know, and I'm just going to leave it at that because, you know, there could be pending litigation about that, but that's completely 1,000% untrue and never do such a thing. And I wish nothing but the best for Kyle, and he's completely innocent and needs to be acquitted.
I do want to say one thing to a lot of people too that you need to understand, and I'll throw a reference to Carl Benjamin and Akilah Hughes' lawsuit. Sargon of Akkad, you may know him, he got sued and he kept his mouth shut about what was going on and let the courts handle it. Ultimately, he won. I'm not saying anything about this or whatever that case may be, but I think there's something to be said for people who say, I'm going to keep it, you know, quiet. We're going to let the courts figure things out. And for people who go on social media and start saying, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened. Not to say anybody's right or wrong, but I think it's important that, especially in things like this. Look, I'll just put it this way. I've got my fair share of litigation, and I never talk about it. And people try to drag me into it. You can't. You don't bring it up. It is a foolish move to get into that stuff publicly. Don't do it. But a lot of people were, of course, asking it, so we're going to save that one for last before we sign off. We don't shy away from the hard questions. I read people smack talking me. I try to as well because we want to keep it real, I guess. So, sure. Yeah, everybody who watched and hanging out these Friday nights, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you smash that like button, subscribe to this show, and become a member at timcast.com because, boy, are we expanding. The new website is so cool. I wish I could just put it up now because of how amazing it looks, but we're getting there. We're getting there. And I think we're going to have like six writers, six reporters to start. It's going to be fantastic. So you can follow the show on Facebook and Instagram at TimCastIRL. We're on TikTok.
Yeah, we're
TimCast
so cool.
_IRL. And you can follow me personally at TimCast basically everywhere else. And we will have the Cast Castle vlog up tomorrow at 9 a.m. I think this is the best episode ever. This is the best vlog we've ever done. It's the 4th of July special. We're on boats. There's animation in it. I'm super excited for this. Kent, who does all the editing work and everything, just hit this one out of the park. So definitely make sure you go to youtube.com/castcastle, subscribe to that. And tomorrow morning you can watch our silly 4th of July adventure. We had a blast. We made ice cream and cheesecake and we have throwing axes and it's just all sorts of shenanigans. And we make fun of Seamus Coughlin of Freedom Tunes. Oh, Seamus, we love you. Did you want to shout anything out, John?
No, look, it was awesome to be here, of course. Please go to nclu.com. We need support to help people whose constitutional rights are being violated. We really, really do. So thank you for having me. It's great fun.
If people want to get in touch with you, to work with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Sure. So on Twitter, I am CaliKidJMP. If they're interested in supporting the NCLU, they can go to nclu.com and they can reach out to the email address info@nclu.com and we'll receive those.
It's really good talking to you, man. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much.
You guys can follow me at iancrossland.net and hit me up at iancrossland on social media. Looking forward to talking to you.
Thank you guys all very much for hanging out on this Friday night instead of going and doing fun, crazy stuff. I know it's super hot, so stay safe. You guys are more than welcome to follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids as I attempt to have more followers than Sour Patch Kids.
We definitely need to do a show on comics, video games, and culture because, like, I got so much to say about Tomorrow War.
We're going to go magic.
And right, and games and D&D. We're planning on doing a D&D show for sure. A weekly D&D show is going to be a blast. We actually talked about this a while ago about finding a dungeon master to like help put together really interesting
Dungeons
scenario.
And Dragons.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my generation.
But there's interesting things we can do with it in terms of politics, like having someone draw up a scenario pertaining to American political conflict, but in a D&D kind of game. Tomorrow we're going to go see Black Widow. Came out, today, even though it was a midnight showing. And there's so much I'm going to have to say about it. We got to put together a new podcast for culture and stuff too. So we got a lot coming. It's all thanks to all of you who are members at timcast.com. The site is expanding rapidly. And everyone who signs up, when that money comes in, I just think about how many more people we're going to hire to do awesome stuff. And so thank you very much. Thanks for hanging out. We'll see you all next time.
Bye, guys.